time is now that we should start with the meeting. But I think the one or two things that I must put them on record.
Thank you for having
me. I fully understand the inconvenience that the rearrangement of the meeting might have caused to not only you as honorable members only, but also the petitioners and the stakeholders that are supposed to help us to help resolve in the impulse ahead of ourselves. The scheduling of the training of members have a negative impact in our program, and it has affected us severely. Not only that, it also goes to next week, because our initial program for next week was that we will go to Gauteng and deal with conclude the Shawela petition that has been in our desk for some time. But because of the joint sitting, there's no way we can be in Gauteng in the morning at 2 o'clock be in the city. So we are going to remove the Shawela and replace it with considerations of reports in the morning and say in Cape Town as it is for the joint city. So I thought it's important to inform you of the possible changes that are going to continuously affecting your planning and programming of your work, including your personal arrangements that you might have in between. Having said so, honorable members, we are expected to hear the leading petitioner here is Mr. Hampton. And we have been told that he's still negotiating his way coming in. But there is also a presenter who was going to follow the main petitioner. We are of the view that if we agreed, we can then allow the supplementary person to take a stage while the real petitioner will follow once arrived. If you don't have anything wrong with that. Honorable Mahakis.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to put on record this week again that it's now the second petition that we've heard this year, and for the second time the members of parliament have received either nothing or documents, but on the day of the hearing a whole stack of additional documents gets placed before us. There's no time to prepare these additional documents. What I received in my pigeonhole was this, which is about a third of the papers that I received this morning. This is unacceptable, Chairperson.
Thank you once again. I'm sure we cannot even defend that. We do not want to go into that. But when I received my documents through the email, I thought everybody was, given them in that way. But having said so, honorable Mohabi.
Can I also perceive that some of us, we did receive documents through email. At least for this time, I think there's been progress. Perhaps we need to check why Honorable George, didn't get his through email. I know most of us, we did receive through email. So I would just suggest that let's not place it as a conclusive error. My brother said, lady before Dr. Appel, it's a question of email.
With my apologies, Honorable Mahalakis, we would want to make sure that everybody receives the documents at the same place. I think, Kaniso, you'll have to check up and make sure that even some kind of, check up with all your members and send the documents that you all receive. If anyone hasn't, then indicate to you so that you close that gap before it gets too late. Thank you, Honorable Members. Can we then proceed? As I recommended that we start with the supplementary presenter in the absence of the main petitioner. And if we agreed, maybe it will be appropriate to know each other because we are going to be in a hearing where we are expecting some stakeholders. Reasoning that stakeholders we should know whether they are here or not, so that by the time comes to respond, they have heard what are the issues on the ground. I must start with myself. My name is Mr. Tamarawa Tovirian, and a chairperson of the Select Committee on Executive Undertaking, Petition and Executive Undertakings. If it is me who cannot know it, I don't know who else will know it, but that's the Honorable Martin.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. My name is Jihad Mahabi, a member of the committee.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Dumi Sami Kimi, permanent delegate from the Western Cape, member of this committee. Thanks.
Morning, everybody. I'm Bronwyn Engbrecht, permanent delegate from Gauteng.
Good morning, everyone. My name is George Michalakis. I'm also a member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Marvin Chetty, a member of the committee, KZN. Morning, everyone. My name is Jacques Lord, and I'm a delegate from the Western Cape and an alternate member for this select committee.
Thank you, honorable members, and our guests, our stakeholders. Can you do likewise?
Good morning, everybody. I'm Susan Campbell. I am from NISA, and I'm the legal advisor to the NISA Ratepayers Association and also a member of the NISA Environmental Forum. And I have knowledge about the ISDS and the appointment of municipal manager issues that have been made. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. I'm Isaac Smith, all the way from Cape Verde.
Good morning, Michael Brevis, Department of Local Government in Western Cape.
Morning, Christian Pretorius. I'm from the Ministry of Finance at the Provincial Government, Western Cape.
Morning, everyone. I'm Fiona Stewart from Legal Services at the Western Cape Provincial Government.
Morning, sir. I'm Pumran Dan from PMG.
Morning, I'm Kathy Vishala from PMG.
And then we do have our support staff, both the secretariat and the content advisor next to me. The three members that have just arrived, without following any sequence, can you also introduce yourself?
I'm a member of this committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to everybody. My name is Tabu Sowan, a permanent delegate from the Eastern Cape. Thank you, Chairperson.
You're welcome.
Nikai, Mahomush, Lina Lagagita, Mahomukui, Kitabukunamitiri, Kalo.
Thank you, Honorable Members. Just for the benefit of those who have just arrived, the main petitioner, Honorable Mwadi, the main petitioner is still on his way coming. But it's the supplementary petitioner who we have agreed that in the meantime she will then lead the presentation while we are waiting for the other one. Honorable Mukwele, thank you for coming. I know normally we don't give you messages, and I'm glad you are here today. It means the history of 2015 is gone. You will be treated equally with others. Over to you, madam. You can take us through, and you start afresh as if you have never told us who you are.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to address this committee. I'm Susan Campbell. I am the I'm an attorney, but I'm not a practicing attorney. I live in NISA, and I am the legal advisor to the NISA ratepayers and a member of the NISA Environmental Forum and a number of other civic organizations. I do not intend taking the committee word for word through the presentation, but possibly I could just give a bit of background to possibly explain the importance of the ISDS tender. This is what I shall start with. The IFKINDA included the view of the Spatial Development Framework. Now, this was introduced in the Municipal Systems Act, and IFKINDA's first Spatial Development Framework was adopted in 2009. At the time, it was highly controversial, especially amongst developers, because it was implementing government policy to curb urban sprawl and to not allow developers to develop exactly where they wanted to, but where we had to start densifying, integrating communities, and it was a great part of the NISA Spatial Development Framework was to stop consuming our environmental and agricultural land with high-income residential estates that place a lot of stress on infrastructure. The greatest opponents to the NISA Spatial Development Framework were Dr. Chris Mulder, who is one of the people who got awarded the tender, Marika Freek, a town planner, Mr. Mike Moore-Brown, who at that stage was in private practice, and Urban Econ. I will explain the relevance of this later. After the Spatial Development Framework was adopted, Mr. Moore-Brown became the town planner of the NISA municipality. His views on the current Spatial Development Framework were no secret. He was completely opposed to it. He did not like the urban edge, and he did not like the core conservation areas and that agricultural areas were being reserved for agriculture. So what happened is, in 2013, Mr. Moore-Brown was now in charge of reviewing the Spatial Development Framework. He decided to do this in an integrated process, calling it the Integrated Strategic Development Framework. The tender, which required extremely highly skilled professionals, very scarce skilled professionals, was only advertised in the Burger and in a small little advertising publication in NISA, the Action Ad. So that way one doesn't know how consultants from the rest of the country would have known about it. This was the first for the country. A company from Cape Town with highly skilled individuals tendered the lowest price. They had the highest triple DEE score, and they should have been awarded the tender. They had extremely competent people as part of their team, because this was a tender that you had to have consortia because of the scarce skills. Yet, the NISA municipality awarded the tender to Dr. Chris Mulder. His team included Marika Frieken and Urban Econ. So we were now faced with a situation where the biggest opponents of the current Spatial Development Framework were now in charge of reviewing it, from internally, from the municipality side, and externally. There was a huge outcry in NISA, and there were 133 objections to the tender in terms of Section 49 of the Supply Chain Management Policy, which is in terms of the MSMA Supply Chain Management Regulations. This was unprecedented. I personally prepared a very lengthy objection. I just brought it here to see, and delivered this on behalf of a number of organizations. Acefift Homeowners, Western Head Conservancy, Environmental Forum, the Western Head Protection Group, and then also in my own capacity, Brussels Bay Homeowners Association, Belvedere Homeowners Association. And this was delivered on the 7th of May. We received a response, all objectors a response to say we simply had personal issues with Dr. Mulder and there was no facts in our objections. Now, this committee is welcome to get a copy later to go through. There were detailed facts about this. One of them was the conflict of interest. It later on turned out that the municipal manager had in fact not referred our objections to an independent person. She referred objections on the 24th of April to an independent person who gave her a response on the 29th of April. So this objection was never referred to an independent person. So the municipal manager flouted the Municipal Fire Management Act supply chain regulations. What happened is there was a lot of lobbying, the politicians, but we had absolutely no response from the NISA politicians. I found out later that the administration had told the politicians that I was a disgruntled tenderer. I was apparently involved in another tender, which was completely untrue, and that I had a personal issue with Dr. Mulder. When the politicians acknowledged to me that they had been misled, after a very long lobbying, I went to see some officials at the provincial treasury. They were extremely helpful. They wrote to the Maitland Municipality, spoke to Minister Alan Windy, or the MEC Alan Windy, who was then of finance portfolio. They wrote a letter to Maitland Municipality in December 2013 to tell them that they had awarded the tender incorrectly because they were using they're using functionality to award it to the team that should not have won the tender, and that's illegal. This letter disappeared. Now, I then kept writing to them until the provincial treasury wrote another letter in February 2014 in which they pointed out to them that they were acting incorrectly. They sent an extremely arrogant letter back to province in which they basically insulted them and paid no heed to it. This carried on until the mayor eventually, under severe pressure, asked the provincial government to investigate the tender. It seemed we were very optimistic. I personally was interviewed by Mr. Graham Pulfer and somebody else. I got the feeling they were very interested. I gave them a very detailed representation of all the things that I had found that were wrong with the tender. The one thing that concerned me is Mr. Pulfer and the person who interviewed me, they did not know supply chain regulations. They were from the local government department. But other than that, I definitely got the feeling they were interested. To cut a long story short, in November, the response was from provincial treasury was received by the Nyasa municipality. It was a summary, and on the summary it said that the report is attached to it. In December, the mayor had an item on the council agenda in which the summary was attached. The provincial treasury summary pointed out at least 10 deficiencies in the process. Two of them were extremely material, conflict of interest, and that the wrong tenderer had been awarded. That there was a paragraph that said this did not influence the outcome of the process, which was of course just ludicrous. I then wrote to the mayor, copied the province, and said to them, "How can you say that awarding a tender to the wrong person does not influence the outcome of the process?" The municipality then postponed the matter to the end of February or March for provincial treasury to come and explain the discrepancy between the ASVAC findings and the conclusion that it did not affect the process. What then happened is that provincial treasury apparently, this was said to me by Mr. Paulson in a telephonic conversation. When they got my letter, they realized that Minister Bedell had signed a wrong letter and they should not have included the paragraph that said it did not influence the outcome of the process. So they took that out. So they then sent it to the municipality. So the municipality now had a clear summary of a report from the provincial government which said this tender had these deficiencies. At the same time, the municipal manager should have been appointed. Mr. Easton, who was the CFO, was recommended for the appointment early in March, but the mayor decided to delay the appointment until she had heard from provincial treasury about the ISDF tender, because obviously Mr. Easton was very much involved with that tender. He was the chair of the BIC and he also was the CFO. When the council meeting was heard at the end of March, the mayor and the legal manager, Melanie Paulson, did not inform the council that they had now received a letter from the provincial government removing the paragraph that it had not affected the outcome of the process. They instead told the council that we've heard nothing from the provincial government. So, quite honestly, it made the provincial government look extremely inept. And they were, with respect, being blatantly misleading. They then went on and appointed Mr. Easton. And here I will now read to Mr. Easton. The municipal manager, Lauren Waring, resigned in, I think, November 2014. They advertised for new municipal manager. There was a short list that included, that second one, yes. Do you mind if I go into that? Because I do sort of, or shall I rather first, shall we first deal with the first one and then I'll get to this later? Oh, yes, sorry, about the ISDF tender. Yes, sorry, I'm actually interrupting myself. Thank you very much. So what happened is I then requested from the Northern Municipality the full report from the provincial government into ISDF team. They told me they didn't have it. I phoned Mr. Paulson. Mr. Paulson would tell me only Mr. Bridell can authorize that it gets sent to the municipality. He advised me I had to get it from the municipality and not from him. I said I knew that, but I could not get it from the municipality if they did not send it to the municipality. So I then, Mr. Bridell was overseas. I phoned his office. He was back, and they referred me to Mr. Paulson. So I was being referred between Mr. Paulson and Mr. Bridell. Now the municipality maintained they had not received the report from Provincial Treasury, which to me was absurd because the mayor had asked for the investigation and why would she not have received the report. What happened is NYSNIP's legal department now had received the new letter, the new summary with the paragraph removed that it didn't affect the outcome of the process, sent a response to the provincial, prepared a response to the provincial government in which they basically told the provincial government that all their findings were wrong except two minor findings. The deputy mayor simply signed the response prepared by the administration and told the provincial treasury that they now considered the matter as dealt with. Now, in the meantime, I could not get hold of the report. I told the province I would refer it to the public protector if they did not send the report to NYSNIP. I referred it to the public protector. It took the public protector 6 months to get the investigation report out of the provincial government. They sent it to me in November last year. I went through it. There were at least 13 findings, that of which 5 were extremely serious about the tender process. The Northern Municipality then issued a press release in which they said that they had refuted all the allegations from Treasury, from provincial government. They were basically wrong and they were just going to carry on with the process. Now, the big concern I have in this matter, other than the fact that it seems as though the municipality is just not interested in subjecting itself to provincial oversight or even following advice from provincial treasury, is the fact that in NYSNIP municipality, I don't know if it's the same everywhere, the administration and the councillors share the same legal manager. The legal manager was part of the irregularities in the ISDF tender. She did not handle the objections properly. And yet, when province had gone to all the trouble of giving them a report in which there were adverse findings, they used the same legal manager who was now reporting to the municipal manager, who was also one of the people who was implicated, to send a response to provincial government to say, no, we don't agree with you. So I hope one could learn something out of this. Municipalities need a legal advisor that reports to a mayor and a separate one to the administration. There is an inherent conflict of interest having one legal advisor or manager reporting to both, because how do their politicians exercise oversight over the administration if the manager who advises them is complicit or reports to the municipal manager who is actually the one who is implicated in the wrongdoing? So, after all this money was spent and wasted, provincial treasury spent all that money, the report just simply has not even been published anywhere and nothing has happened and NYSNIP is just pretending that everything is actually fine. And by now, all the tender money has been spent and the consultants are now asking for more money, which the NYSNIP Council have approved, and this money was included in the original tender amount. I don't know if there's anything else you would like to hear me on this aspect? Sorry. Is there anything else you would like me to address you on this aspect, or can I move on to the municipal manager? Okay. So now the advertising...
Thank you very much.
So now the advertising to the municipal manager in November in 2014. Quite a few candidates apply, including a few, there was an extremely good black candidate who was shortlisted. He withdrew from the process and was not interviewed. So the municipality was faced with a situation where they had three white candidates. There was one, Mr. Libber, who they scored quite highly in the interview, and initially it would appear that they were going to appoint him. At the council meeting in December, the mayor then says no, she wants to advertise again to find a more representative candidate. Everybody understood that as representing the geographics. In other words, they were trying to look for a candidate who was not white. So they advertise for literally from the 19th of December to early January, in a time when you would not expect too many people to see the advertisement. Now, Mr. Easton, the CFO, who did not apply in first round, applies. The advertisement says you have to have good communication skills in two of the three official languages in the Western Cape, English, Afrikaans, or isiXhosa. Well, Mr. Easton is Scottish. He can only speak Afrikaans. English. He does not speak isiXhosa and he does not speak Afrikaans. Mr. Easton gets shortlisted. Mr. Easton has a B degree in public administration from the Technical College of Glasgow in Scotland. And Mr. Ronkwana applies as well. He speaks three languages or more. He speaks Afrikaans, English, and isiXhosa, and I think Setswana. Sesotho. He has a PhD in public administration. Mr. Ronkwana. He was clearly what they were actually looking for when they advertised. All of the candidates who got shortlisted, Ms. Libbe was again included, were found to be more than qualified to do the work. Mr. Easton got the highest score because he was interviewed by the mayor, deputy mayor, and by one of the councillors who works with him. So, quite honestly, I feel he had an unfair advantage, and that was in the interview. Other than that, his score was not higher than the other candidates. So Mr. Libbe, who should have got the job in December, was at the second highest place, and then Mr. Ronkwana. Mr. Ronkwana had something in the 60%. So we would have expected Mr. Ronkwana to be appointed. No, the mayor goes and appoints Mr. Easton, who got a much lower qualification, and who we now found out has been CFO for 5 years without the necessary qualifications, had a B degree in public administration, and he's supposed to have an honours degree in BCom for be a CFO. So he was our CFO without the necessary qualifications. This is not all. He gets appointed without his qualification being verified. This is pointed out in the report that he sent to the provincial MEC, Mr. Bradell, that his qualification has not yet been verified. This is not questioned by Minister Bradell. The NISN ratepayers, he's appointed at the end of March. The NISN ratepayers in August write to Minister Bradell and say, why has Mr. Easton's qualification not been verified? And why is Mr. Easton, now we get his contract of employment, is being paid more than the legally permitted amount, the maximum permitted amount for municipal matches, he gets paid more than that. We ask why this has happened. There are prescribed maximum amounts that municipal managers may be paid in municipalities according to the category of the municipality. The municipality pays Mr. Easton 9% more than a maximum permitted amount. Without following the prescribed procedure, they're supposed to follow a procedure where they showed they could not find anybody at that salary in NISA and then they could get special permission to pay him more. No permission, the mayor simply signed the contract with him and gave him 9% more. Mr. Libbe was prepared to work for that salary. I don't know whether Mr. Ronkwana was prepared to work for that salary. So, we now write to Minister Bradell. We get in about November last year, we get a response from SearchWorks, which is an internet search engine which says Mr. Easton obtained this qualification. I found SearchWorks because I want to know, have they graded this qualification? Because you cannot just see whether somebody has obtained it. It's a foreign qualification and it has to be graded by SACWA to see whether it complies with the municipal manager. SearchWorks tell me they know nothing about this. They got this information from two other companies I'm assuming. So this was hearsay. And Minister Bradell and the NISN municipality accept this. I then write to the NISN municipality, send them the SACWA application form for grading and verification of foreign qualifications. They have done nothing about it. Minister Bradell tells us the maximum salaries for municipal managers have now been increased, so the issue of Mr. Easton's salary has been resolved. So we have got a municipal manager in NISN whose qualification, as we speak now, has not been verified. And in terms of the regulations, if he does not qualify, his appointment is void ab initio. Thank you. I have nothing further. I don't know if anybody's got questions.
Thank you very much.
Can I check, honourable members, whether we would want all of them to present and you come later, or you want to ask questions on one by one? Honourable Mahalas. Can you see this one of the mic?
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I actually have a question for you just in terms of procedure. The documentation that I did receive indicates it's the report by Mr. Hampton where it says that some of these matters are currently before the court. If we can perhaps just get an indication as to which aspects of the issues that was raised now are before the court and what the impact thereof would be, because I am slightly concerned that if the matters are still before the court, whether it would be proper for Parliament to, at this stage, hear and intervene in such a matter if it is before a court of law. I'm just concerned that the principle of separation of powers might be ignored in that incident. That is something we should be careful of. I don't have a problem if there are issues that are not before court to deal with us, but I'm very, very reluctant to move towards an area which is before court.
Thank you very much. I think it's a valid concept that all of us must be sure of which one is the matter before the court, which one is not, so that we don't create confusion in between. If you were to help us, of the two cases that we spoke of, the one of the appointment of the tender and the appointment of the MM, are they all still open or are in there?
I should explain. The ISF tender is not before court. Mr. Liver, in December last year, or November, issued summons against the Nightmare Municipality for damages for not employing him as municipal manager. So that aspect, there is a court case where Mr. Liver has now sued the Nightmare Municipality for his salary because they should have appointed him, not Mr. Easton. That is the only aspect regarding the appointment of the municipal manager that is before court. So I don't know if that will affect this portfolio.
I'm sure the two matters before us are not in court, if I got it correctly.
Yes, is there ever a match between Mr. Liber, in which he is now suing the municipality for his salary for 2 years, which is more than 2 million rand, because they unlawfully appointed Mr. Easton. We are not involved in that. Thank you.
I'm comfortable now, one of us.
May I clarify something on that? Just in case
you are still going to come, unless you are Mr. Hampton. You are going to be given space to elaborate on your things. We just want to get from this presentation if there's anything that needs to be clarified. Your time will come. The reason why we started with her, we were informed that because of the flight and you were delayed, and then we said we shouldn't form one thing. Let's start with the subordinating of your petition, and you'll be given space once you are here to present.
That's correct. I appreciate that.
Thank you very much. Honourable Makalagis.
Chairperson, if I can just have a follow-up.
JTUS is also okay.
If I could just have a follow-up on that. I'm not very sure if I agree with you. As the explanation was given, I understand that part of that issue, even if it's a civil matter, part of the question that needs to be answered in that matter goes to the core of the processes and the validity of the appointment. I would just suggest that this committee gets advice from our legal advisors just to ask which aspect of this matter is currently sub judice in court, and that we then deal only with the matters that are not affected by that. We as a committee cannot make that decision at this stage. We are clearly going to decide, but I think it would be advisable that we get some professional advice in that instance. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we can allow that. We can be adjourned for at least 10 minutes.
Meaning if we are taking the route that we are having consensus on, it may not be the content advice. We should get the legal unit of the parliament to come and take us through this, which I agree with. Is there anything that you wanted?
just mention one thing. The one thing that concerns me, setting aside the court case, is I'm very concerned about the qualification of the municipal manager. I think this
Ms. Kemba. The point here, members wanted to satisfy themselves that they don't encroach in the area of the other institution. So one to always, you know, respect the judiciary as much as they respect ourselves. It's not that they're saying we are not going to deal with the matter. We wanted the legal opinion of Parliament. Thank you.
I'm not sure this is a good progressive mention, but earlier on I think the petitioner here wanted to indulge specifically on this particular matter. I'm not sure I was just indulging our wisdom to say, why can't you allow him, even if he's going to present, specifically because I think he raised his hand while you were dealing with the question of saying, what are the legal implications if we proceed? So I'm just suggesting to you with due respect, can you afford him the option to specifically to address you on that particular matter that is still before us, not necessarily to the presentation before?
Just to check on your honorable mark, to give us an opinion on...
No, not an opinion. Earlier on, he raised his hand, specifically when a question was posed, whether we can proceed with this matter while there's a matter before court. Then he raised his hand. I'm not sure whether it was specifically to this matter that relates to that. If that is the case, I would really suggest let's also afford him an opportunity, specifically on that, so that as and when we go out, we have sense of what is what intended to be.
Are you coming to this particular issue specifically?
That's correct.
Can I give you 2 minutes to talk to it?
Much appreciated. I just wanted to make a couple of clarifications. Inside my position, I mentioned many court cases against me. None of those court cases would affect this matter because they are all done in the personal capacity of the politicians and their associates. Secondly, I have had no contact with Mr. Libba. I have no idea of anything with regard to his case. Anything that I present is free of him. And thirdly, if we return to this matter, I'd just like to add a couple of points to that particular part of the petition.
You'll be given that already. Honourable Mahathir, were you on the same issue?
Chairperson, I would thank you for the clarity, by the way. I would agree with Honourable Kimby that perhaps the committee, just for our own sake, just takes perhaps 5 minutes sooner rather than later. There's just one or two concerns that I think we need to clarify amongst ourselves, because if we venture into an area, we can't return, and we need to at least satisfy ourselves that what we are doing is within our powers. So if I may ask you, I concur with Honourable Kimby, perhaps a 5 minute quick discussion with all the colleagues, please.
While we are calling the legal unit, you also wanted to have ourselves talking.
Yes, if we can have a quick committee caucus.
Thank you very much. No, thank you very much. The secretariat already went out to try and organize the legal unit. Honorable Mstanda, you are welcome. I know you were anxious to speak to our neighbor, so I'm telling you. Our guest stakeholders, can you allow this key outset? Thank you once more. I think in no time we'll go back to where we were supposed to be. You are prepare yourself. The next speaker will be yourself. We obtained a legal opinion and we will proceed with the hearing as they are. Because procedure is the committee today is not even going to deliberate on
the content of the presentation. We just take the presentation as they have. If there are any clarity-seeking kind of questions, they'll ask for you to clarify. And the committee at its own, you know, time will sit and look at everything that's said to us, arrive at the determination, which will then be the decision of the committee moving forward. So we are going to proceed as such. Nothing will hinder our work. Without much ado, we would now invite Mr. Hampton, who is the main petitioner, to brief us about his petition. Earlier I did not do that because I was just saying because you are a supplementary. You don't have to put word by word of what is in it. You just, you know, deal with the major things that you wanted us to look at them. But we're seeing your documents are thick, we've formed to some extent. Over to you. You are welcome for that matter.
Okay, thank you for hearing me.
Okay.
I would just like to make a few additions with regards to the municipal manager section. Apologies if, just inform me if any of this has been mentioned. The very important part of the Auditor General's queries was with regards to the vendors, the irregular tenders valued at more than 9 million rand, which was basically a bonus to local suppliers. Sam, did you mention that at all? Because it does overlap on the ISDF. Basically, a tenderer who did not submit a BEE certificate and didn't score the highest points could win a tender because the Nazi municipality was allowing a premium of up to 11% on tenders exceeding a million and 25% in tenders between 30,000 and a million. That would have been to be termed as wasteful expenditure because you're supposed to go to the lowest bidder and in doing so save the taxpayer money. Instead, this local premium or bonus was given to suppliers, and in that way you could have somebody who should better have got the tender receive the work. This must be in the tens of millions. There was, I think, a warning at one stage from the provincial treasury. Campbell can confirm or deny. I think there was a warning from the provincial treasury, and then it was ignored, but Ms. Campbell actually did a submission to the Nazi municipality, provincial treasury and national treasury, and there was no response. These are irregularities that I believe that have to be looked under with regards Grant Easton's period as CFO and in some cases as the new municipal manager. Another one of the irregularities that the Auditor General pointed out was that a private contractor was receiving most of the work from the electrical department. I don't believe that it was a coincidence that his wife was the manager of the electrical department. Her name would be Manon McDonald. Manon McDonald. Now, we came across amounts of up to, I think it was 1.2 million, but this had apparently been going on for many years, so the amount will be much higher. The question would be, why would the CFO not be questioning a manager who's giving so much to her husband? Similarly, with the same person, this manager was involved in controlling the Nazi municipality fleet, and she procured a vehicle for the municipality at one stage through Nissan. It was notable that her and her husband were driving new Nissans at the same time period, and please, this is an allegation, it should always be researched and investigated to find out where the truth lies. But we were never given a full explanation of whether they had gained any benefit from Nissan for their own vehicles. It is interesting that the manager has now resigned without investigation.
Bear with us, Parsons, you don't want to miss and come back unnecessarily. I just want to check, are you talking about the same people, the contract for electricity, or are you talking about the other person we're dealing with the manager fleet, or what's the difference between the two?
it's that one.
Manager of the electrical department, but also controlling the fleet or the municipality.
Proceed.
I don't have it confirmed, but apparently she's gained a job with another municipality in either district. Also concerning is we wondering why are we here as citizens, especially I'm wondering, I can't speak from Campbell, why are we the ones who are activists in our town complaining about all these things happening within our municipality and the opposition aren't the ones following through? So again, it's something that needs to be investigated. It cannot be an accusation. But it's notable that the ANC chief whip and the man that is Stephen De Vries and Clive Boy, the ANC councillor is considered to be his right-hand man, are both receiving the studies paid for by the Lars municipality. These studies are not to further their careers as councillors, it's to further their private careers. I don't know what the total amount is, but I know that one payment alone for ANC for Stephen De Vries was $28,000. The ANC chief whip. And this amount is to be considered to be regular expenditure. Please note that we've contacted the municipality on, you know, a lot of these issues in great detail. In my case, I am blocked. The municipality does not respond to me. Not just the municipality, the politicians don't respond either, both the DA and the ANC. With regards to the ISDF tender where it overlaps, again, apologies if it was mentioned before, but a check for the ISDF tender was issued before the contract was awarded. Yes. Before it was signed. A check for 498,560 rand was issued. 498,560 rand was issued to NASA Creative Heads 1 month before they signed the contract. Sorry, 1 day before they signed the contract for the ISDF tender. National Creative Heads. That was the company that Ms. Campbell would have dealt with in detail in the first section. Couple of these irregularities as quickly as possible so we can get to the next section, slowing down if need be, because these are all things that are, to me, contraventions of the supply chain management. There were upgrades to the offices. This was done outside or over and above the budget that was allocated. This was upgrades to the offices. They got fixed screen TVs, ESPD, etc. And we are now more than a year later and they're yet to be supplied with what those costs were and why there wasn't an investigation into it as possible irregular expenditure.
Mr. Chair, can we just have clarity in terms of which whose offices? I think I lost something.
Who's that?
Which offices are we talking about that upgraded? Whose offices?
In the main building for the politicians and the municipal staff, particularly the municipal staff.
Council offices. You mean council offices?
Council offices. And municipal staff, in particular the municipal manager, who at that stage was Lauren Waring.
Are you comfortable, honorable? Thank you very much.
We've had quite a problem in Liza with regards protests in the same area which have closed the N2. It's in the Nakis Oplat area. One of the main spots was apparently supposed to be a failure by the municipality to provide housing on time and who they awarded it to. It was actually called the T20 tender. that is added as evidence in this case. You can refer to that in detail. Again, a report by Ms. Campbell. It seems to be that the municipality was at fault, and this is what led to the riots. It was an interesting situation because one of the DA constituents and ex-board committee member, well, he was actually a ward committee member then, actually had asked online for people to use real bullets on the protesters, and that actually led to their dismissal from the DA constituency. Unfortunately, the DA and the municipality would not respond only on it, but at least they did. Although Jacques Lort is here today, and he said that they had taken action. They were a ward committee member and an ex-ward committee member, both Ward 10, Central Town. And one was also on the NASA Ratepayers Associations Committee. They called for, one called for live bullets to be used on the protesters, posted on Facebook. And the other one suggested that they use bulldozers. I forget their name, but it was the same caterpillar make as used by Israel against the Palestinians and their protests. I believe it was a matter that deserved a full response. Another detail complained by Campbell was the financial event by the Director of Planning and Development, Mr. Mike Morn Brown. You would have heard his name mentioned earlier with regard to ISDF tender as well. This was for alleged interfering with supply chain management. An accusation was made by manager Jonathan Mabula. Strangely, the municipality did not investigate the manager's claims and apparently instituted an inquiry into him instead. And continuing to show that there's problems in that whole FEM scenario is that in November 2014, the Bid Evaluation Committee, which included aforesaid manager Jonathan Mabula and chairperson Michael Roeda, both quit the BEC because they claimed that there was interference into their responsibilities. And this would have involved senior management. Again, you would have to have an independent inquiry, but instead members involved on that committee were the ones who handled it, and we have never, it's never been made public what the results of that investigation were. Possibly on a smaller note, just before the Bid Evaluation Committee quit, they also reported that one of the NASNA Nissan tenders, tender 29/2014, for the supply of vehicles and equipment, had gone missing. We, again, have never had the results of any investigation into that. Sorry? It was the T29/2014 tender. The tender went missing. The tender documents were missing. The NASA municipality, then MM Lauren Waring, said that there was going to be an investigation internally. My question is, why was there not an investigation involving the SADS, and why, who actually investigated so that there could be no conflict of interest, and why has no report ever been made available to the public? Can you help here?
The tender was cancelled because the Nice Medicine tender has gone missing. And it was a fact that the tender was given to the same official, Manon McDonald, who Mr. Hampton had previously referred to, by the supply chain manager against the instructions of Mr. Roeda. and that the tender went missing after Ms. McDonald had been given access to the tenders. We have not heard anything about that. The tender was then re-advertised, but it was cancelled.
Last year, 2 million rand was made available to ward councillors to spend as they wish on priorities that they considered as priorities in their areas. Politicians cannot be involved in the administration of a municipality, so this must also be a regular expenditure. I attended the Ward 10 meeting where they decided how they would spend that. They awarded it at their whim on things where nobody had made a submission. I'm going to get to it in far more detail later, but we have to consider then TFO, now current NM, Gulf Eastern's role, and illegally paying the debt of Nasa Tourism with taxpayer funds for 4 years in a row. We also need to find out if the municipality is in any way responsible for the fact that a single restaurant, apparently called Fendler, previously Communities, was allowed to reach the stage where it owed the municipality $4 million in rent and rates. The restaurant is on municipal property. That is currently in court between the restaurant owner and the municipality. I have no details of what is happening in that court case. 2 years ago, the NISO vehicle testing station was closed and four officers were suspended. A company called ENS was appointed to do the forensic investigation and paid $670,000. During that period, an employee of the same company then started his own company and the municipality switched the business without a tender to him. His business is called Horizon Forensics. I don't know what the final amount is, but at one stage it was a further $785,000. So I came asking for it to be investigated. Why was there no tender? And could it be considered that the municipality helped an employee of a contractor start his own business? That's the effect that it would have had. Back in 2012, and we have yet to receive any information on this, the Nasa municipality wrote off $50 million in services and interest debts incurred by ratepayers. We need to know who benefited. That would be the end of the presentation on the municipal manager and on queries with regards to his irregularity. If there are any questions.
I have your pardon with that.
I'm finished with that section, thank you. I'm going to go on to more detail about Nasa Tourism.
I was going to say that day, he sent everything and then to them come and left that
side. Okay. I would like to read directly from this part of the presentation just so that I get right as it involves the Constitution and I don't want to get my numbers A's and B's incorrect. I will make it a lot shorter than overall, but basically the situation was that NISA Tourism ran at a loss for 4 years between 2010-11 financial year and 2014-15. The vast majority of their contracts and tenders were awarded without tenders. And that cannot happen because Nasa Municipality is fulfilling a government mandate. And to go back to the beginning of that, the 1996 Schedule 4 Part 8 designates that tourism as a functional area of concurrent national and legislative competence. and part B that the following local government matters to the extent set out in sections 155.6 and 155.7 local tourism. So you can look at the top and you find out how it is awarded nationally to provincial and then down to municipalities. And the municipality then has awarded the work, their competency for tourism to an organization called Nelson Tourism, a Section 21 company, so that that mandate is fulfilled. The majority of Nelson Tourism's funding came from the municipality, the amount varied, but over those 4 years it ranged from 4 to 4.5 million a year, which was the majority of the organization's funding. And according to the FMA, all taxpayers' money is accountable no matter where it goes. There are many question marks over NASA Tourism. NASA Tourism existed because of the service level agreement with the municipality, and that SLA stipulated that 20% of the funds it receives must go towards development. But that money didn't go towards development. So the municipality was aware that NASA municipality was a contravention of its conduct and was in the red, yet had its contract renewed and received taxpayers' money every year. Where some of that money went, it must be considered that it went to consultants and to pay the salary of the office manager. The same office manager had a trip to Jamaica paid for by NASA Tourism, i.e. paid by taxpayer funds, supposedly on behalf of NASA's Rastafari community of 154 people. And nobody's ever been able to show me where that benefit derived from. Why this is so serious is because the board of directors, according to their own rule of governance, is responsible for the organization, ultimately responsible. CEO might be appointed and obviously has responsibility, but he in turn is responsible to the directors. I reported my concerns to many people, including, right in the beginning, councillors who were on the board of directors. In the beginning, they would have been Councillor Speaker Wasserman and Councillor Esme Edge. You can only serve a term of 3 years, so other councillors have also been on the board during the questionable period. That would have included ex-speaker Councillor Dawson and ANC Chief Whip Stephen De Vries. Eventually, they got rid of the CEO, Sean Panek. If they had responded and listened to me, they would have saved a lot of money if they'd done it before. But even while they were getting rid of him, and after they got rid of him, they still weren't prepared to be forthcoming on everything that happened. And I believe that the reason why is because the directors are ultimately responsible, not the CFO. And although there was a disciplinary process with outright legal authority, I think it was Desiree Barnard, who found the CEO guilty on 4 gross charges of insubordination, each one a dismissible offense. They instead asked him to sign a secrecy agreement and gave him a R270,000 handshake. A R270,000 farewell golden handshake. Then I believe that was done so that they could keep the matter quiet. I persisted, and as my activism actually grew out of NASA Tourism and has led to many other things, but through informants and also partly through the public protector, I gained more documents and slowly built up that information in the last 5 years. At one of the meetings, Grant Easton, who was on the subcommittee, the Committee for Finance for NASA Tourism, there because he was the CFO for our municipality. It was agreed at the meeting he attended that they would pay the debt with a grant and aid from our municipality. Now the tourism debts. It is interesting that the grant and aid, the largest grant and aid granted by our municipality, is the only grant and aid that doesn't go through the grant and aid committee. When the public protector contacted then municipal manager Lauren Waring at my request, Lauren Waring responded that NASA tourism had nothing to do with the NASA municipality. Despite one, she was awarding the majority of the funds to NASA tourism that allowed it to operate, and two, that she was on the board of directors as well. Very strangely, the public protector, Bruce Bezos, who had all the information in front of him and had promised me he would never let it go because of the MFMA and you have to follow all money, taxpayers' money, where it goes. I don't have proof of this, but he told me that he was under pressure from his bosses to stop it. And he, knowing that Lauren Waring was lying to him, accepted her reasoning that NASA municipality had nothing to do with NASA tourism. And no investigation was carried out. I don't know who his bosses were. Sorry, I can add more rumour, but I'd rather stick to facts.
Just switch this one off for a minute. Switch that mic off.
Sir, I just need clarity. So this matter was referred to the public protector. So that's the first question. And if it was referred to the public protector, what was the public protector's findings in this matter? They let it go. There was nothing to be investigated. As said, they accepted Lauren Waring's letter, and I have included her letter in the evidence.
Just to follow up,
if this was referred to the public protector, they investigated it, and they found there's nothing to investigate, then why is this matter before us?
I've got any report that they've written to them, whether it says nothing, they will submit to you to us in that regard. If is there anything which they're saying someone was supposed to implement the decisions of the PP should have been in that word. I thought let's get to all the facts and okay.
Honorable Mark.
We are not engaging the report. We only seek clarity. So, you know, other matters that are being raised by our member are matters for debate, and I'm sure it's not a time for debate.
I thought that was clarified that you accepted that decision. Thank you very much.
Proceed. My apologies. I felt like Mr. Launch's intervention was at bay. It's notable that I had actually presented the issues to Launch, and he has not followed through with them.
You mean now not?
Yes. I consider him to be part of the reason why this is all blocked.
I was just so interesting. Honorable Mukul.
Thank you very much. I think we should allow the speaker to give us facts where we need clarity. We ask questions and he continues them. It's to the debate to who was engaged and when and how, we'll then enter into it as we do the deliberations of the submission. Let's allow the speaker, let us not in any way threaten him. Because some of us are taking facts and we want to ask questions.
Can we follow that procedure? Because it's the procedure we are operating on a regular basis. Honorable Mike.
Chairperson, my bad, getting on what Honorable Mukwege say, but where we missed the point, I think we are limited to say.
He also said
that
where there is something.
Yes, no, I fully acquainted with it. I missed this latter part, but I need to get clarity also.
What you said about that? Proceed,
Mr. Hampton.
I would just like to sum up everything I said maybe into one or two sentences. The facts of the matter is that an organization, Mars of Tourism, received public...
My apologies for interrupting. I want to get clarity. I'm not sure there was this thing of Mr. Lord, and I wanted to check what was happening, where the petitioner was saying I engaged also Mr. Lord. I missed it there. I don't know what was really happening. Can I get clarification on that one? I haven't even seen it.
Maybe mentioned just before that I initially had a meeting with Minister MEC Alan Windy with regard to this matter. There were several people there from the DA constituency who have now one running for office and the other one has gained office. This was a result of Premier Helen Zille refusing to answer my questions in public. As a result...
Honourable Mokwele, please don't start there. Mr. Hampton, because he lose focus when you...
Chairman, in your respect, this thing of Mr. Lord, and Honourable Lord, I'm not sure, were you referring to Honourable Lord at the back, that you engaged him on this matter? Chairman, can I request that in this case, Honourable Lord will have a conflict of interest? There is no way that he can sit in this meeting if at some stage he had an opportunity or a TV to engage on this matter. Please, as a matter of principle, there is no way that he can be a referee and a player. Can he excuse himself, please?
I think I would agree for him not to participate as a member, but he can sit. Not necessarily to leave the meeting. I would have no jurisdiction over that area, colleagues. We need to, procedurally correcting whatever. I would ask him not to participate on the matter, but I would allow him to sit in this, particular precinct.
There is a principle of disclosure of interest and declaration of interest. It says, in a case of disclosure of interest, from the onset, Honorable Lord was supposed to say to us, I have an interest in the matter. When you disclose, you can't remain in the procedure. It's procedural.
Just two things. If the honourable member read his document as he claimed he read it, he would have seen that reference was made and would have come up an hour and a half into the meeting. That's the first thing. The second, I'm not the person that has to answer about this. I have nothing to do with any of this. There's separate matters that's in front of us. So I'm a member of this committee, so except if you want to take it back to the committees and then say, I'm not a member of this committee, I want to kick me off this, then we can take it that route as well.
I think the point that I've been raising, Honourable Members, I'm saying, Honourable Lloyd, if it's a constituent, he has got a constituency officer, I guess, around the area the issues emanated from. And the point that you are raising, I'm saying, we may not remove him from the meeting, but he may not participate in this matter. That's the point I'm bringing in. Honourable Mahakis.
I thought this mission.
Oh, yes, you are right.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. I think I'm a bit supporting you. It's up to the member. You know the rules. That if he knows that he is implicated here, he's supposed to declare that I've got a conflict of interest in this one. Can you excuse me? But nevertheless, you are as you said, you cannot remove him. It's up to him. And at the end of the day, we are taking anything. We know that you are here, you didn't declare. You cannot force, you cannot do anything. I support you, but it's up to him. If he feels that, he can sit back, we cannot allow him to speak.
I think Honorable Mahalikis, I'm sorry about that. Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the conflict of interest would arise when a person has an interest in the matter and is at the same time a judge in the matter. Now, I respectfully submit that if or as long as Honourable Longt is not part of the deliberations and the decisions of this committee, that there is no conflict of interest. He's not going to take part in the deliberations of this committee. He's an alternate, and he has as a member a right to sit in on the committee as any member of the public. So as long as he is not part of the deliberations of this committee, there is no conflict of interest, and then there's nothing to do here.
Yes. Have you done?
I was rudely interrupted with all due respect to towards the end, but yes, that was my question.
Thank you very much. Honorable Hart. Chairperson, I can't dispute your ruling on this matter, but let me indicate that Statement A, whether we like it or not, a reference is made with regard to Honorable Lord of this committee can have a prayer to invite Honorable Lord to appear before it as outlined in terms of Section 69 of the Constitution on issues that can be raised by a petitioner. Remember, Honorable Chair, we are dealing with a matter to me that appears to be more sensitive. At times when we say disclose interest and best use, not necessarily to impinge the person, but it helps also to assist in terms of his integrity within the matter. It's not necessarily to say we want to get rid of you. I was saying, safe to say when you say you disclose your interest, for argument's sake, there might be matter that might be raised. I have an interest in that matter that would be raised by the petitioner with regard to his engagement with Honorable Lord. Officials and states might arrive to a stage where the committee can decide to say, can Honorable Lord come and appear? From his capacity as the PCO member in that particular area, we have the right to do that. And I was just saying, in case he feels he can remain here, Honorable Trim has also clarified it's fine. We cannot force that. And nonetheless, I was saying, from the premise of addressing the principle, in most instances where you have an interest in a matter, doesn't necessarily mean you have to benefit. Your participation can also be seen as an interest in a particular matter. So it was in the context, but nonetheless, I can't dispute your ruling. But I was just questioning how that in this case, there's a possibility that you might also wish, depending on what we hear from the petitioner, what was the role of Mr. Lord in this entire thing, and what was his final contribution in terms of assisting on this particular matter? Thank you.
I think, Honorable Lord, the point that is in between the members here is the fact that directly or indirectly, the matter saying you are conflicted one way or another. It is up to yourself to take any decision, whether to say I'm recusing myself or I say I'm not going to say, but I would advise that in terms of, you know, dealing with the issues in our before us, you have to be a bit reserved in that regard. Unless you are saying I want to testify at a particular time, then you will be allowed to do that. I'm not sure whether you would want to say something on that.
Chairperson, I will respect your ruling, but I want to make it also clear that engagement is a two-way street. And I will acknowledge that there was engagement and answers given to Mr. Hampton. Okay? Subsequent to that, okay, there has been no further engagements. Okay? There's been a one-way communication.
Point of order. I think the thing that Honorable Lord is addressing, it can also be a matter for debate. Your main concern was around this particular matter, that he might be either way, directly or directly, be conflicted. Immediately acknowledging that there's been an engagement, we have an interest to know what is that engagement all about. So safe to say, the person for now, you're merely asking him whether he feels comfortable to remain in the proceedings, or he be accused for the sake of his integrity, but if he feels he must to respond on that particular matter of saying you are engaged, you are an informal or informal, the fact of the matter, the committee has got the right in terms of Section 69 to summon any person. That is what the Constitution says. So in this case, your question was specific to say, do you remain in the proceedings regardless of what you face as a committee, or he excuses himself. I think that is the point.
Honorable Lloyd, is it clear?
Chair, it's clear. I will remain and I will not ask the questions.
Thank you very much. Can you proceed, Mr. Hampton? We apologize for...
Honorable Lloyd.
Chair, thank you very much. I was saying
that's just sometimes the minute, giving the light, giving the light.
I was just saying, let us not waste time as to whether Honorable Warlord will remain in the committee or he will go outside. I was just saying, let's allow the petitioner time, because after all, we are here to hear his side of the story and then leave an issue of mess alone. So I think because he has already recused himself, we can now continue with the business of the day.
Thank you very much. Mr. Wundt.
Thank you. It's a matter of facts and the delivery of a report rather than debate. The facts I would like you to consider is that the municipal manager, Lauren Waring, lied to the public protector. That needs to be investigated, and now the municipality and her role with regards to the financial irregularities within NAS and tourism. There's no public protector saying that, refuting the facts that I've presented. There's been no investigation. What's very interesting is how everything has, to me, had a lid kept on it. In a way, it seemed that Grant Easton's appointment as the municipal manager was preordained, and then in the same way, the appointment of Greg Vogt as the CEO of tourism seemed to be preordained. He was on the board of directors with the politicians that I've mentioned. He arguably was the most involved out of all the board of directors with regards to the so-called oversight and runnings of NAS and tourism. When CEO Sean van Eck was dismissed or kindly let go, Greg Vogt, despite being on board of directors, not the CEO, and despite the rules of governance not allowing an executive board director, he ran the organization for 22 months, no CEO. And during that period, received 20,000 rand a month through a third party, i.e. National Tourism didn't pay him the money directly. Instead, they paid an organization that he was involved with who then billed them for his services, even though a director on the National Tourism Board can't receive any payment. When you look at it in greater context, it could be said, and I believe it will show, that they were managing a situation in which they were all culpable, they were keeping it covered up, and they were strengthening their position. And when I say that, I can give the example of the fact that eventually Greg Vogt did become CEO. He did get a big salary. Councillor Esma Edgy was on the board, became the deputy mayor. And Councillor Busserman, who is no longer working for the council, she has left, she became the speaker. At the same time, when they had to select that CEO, eventually after the 22 months, the process was very worrying, i.e. the same directors who were involved got to elect their own culpable director as the CEO. On that panel, the final panel, was Municipal Manager Lauren Waring, ANC Chief Whip Stephen De Vries, and Deputy Chairperson Nan Ratterat. What was further interesting is that the other consultant who was being paid was a man called Dirk Joubert, who was apparently brought in without tender by the municipality to make a new constitution, a new rule of governance for NASA tourism, so that it could become a greater body than tourism, i.e. represent all sectors of business in NASA. They've actually completed that process and renamed the organization as NASA and Partners. So the same people who were involved in maladministration, no more NASA tourism. Nasner and Partners. So the same people who deserve investigation for possible maladministration, possible corruption, now actually are in charge of an even bigger mandate. What is even more odd is that Pat Dirk-Hubert, who had worked on changing the rules, along with Greg Vogt, who later became the CEO, Dirk-Hubert was appointed to run the process whereby they would initially filtered down the candidates for CEO. So the same man that Greg Voigt was paying for his work as a consultant for NAS Tourism became the same person who participated in the CEO selection process. Even stranger is that, whether true or not, it was a big scandal in our town at that stage of abuse at the NAS Elephant Park, which is our second biggest attraction. Greg Voigt used to work for the NAS Elephant Park. Although the charges have been dropped, they've been dismissed by the court, there's no further investigation. At that stage, he was named in an animal abuse case as the ex-manager of the NAS Elephant Park, which is obviously not the best tourist image, yet he was still the person who was put into running for CEO and Gambit. It just seemed that everything that happened was against all odds. It somehow came about. I'm not going to go into the other small items within this. You have the reports and I'm sure it'll read. I would like to point out that, again, part of the bigger context, and it will be summed up within my submission, is that it be considered that there has been political and local government interference into getting answers with regard to these issues. In that light, where I've mentioned some people's names in this report, I have questioned people such as Mr. Lund, who I approached about several of these issues. And I did not approach him in his capacity as a member of this committee. I approached him as the DA's Easter Region Manager. A big part for me as a citizen, which is the final part of the submission, is the unconstitutional blocking of communication. How difficult it has been for me to actually get answers with regards to so many issues. I have many cases against me. Cases are never laid in the capacity as a political party or municipality. They're laid in the personal capacities of several politicians, including the deputy mayor, the ex-speaker, the DA branch manager, and the head of tourism. They all put against me for a civil suit, harassment, common injury, etc. What is interesting is that they were prepared to bring all these cases against me, which I believe is intimidation, but at no stage are they prepared to be forthcoming and actually answer the questions. I've written extensively on this. I've criticized many people, including Mr. Lund. There are some people who like what I write, and obviously the people I write do not like what I write. But no matter my delivery, at the heart of it, I have delivered tons of facts and the over a million words I've written. And I've had to be my own media because I am so blocked out, locally and provincially. I have contacted all the way up to Premier Helen Zilla. With regards to NAS tourism matter, probably the most person I hold most responsible would be MEC Alan Windy. MEC Alan Windy had that meeting with me after Premier Zilla wouldn't respond to my questions publicly, and promised to give a recording of the meeting, and then denied the recording of the meeting. And I do have that on email record, because I believe that if something is presented to you and there is a record, you are obviously more culpable, and it must be questioned why you haven't taken it further. Minister Windy, or sorry, did I say MEC Windy, was the MEC for tourism. So he was the most relevant regards to the NAS tourism matter.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Could I just ask the petitioner, Mr. Mike Hampton, what the results were, the outcomes of the court cases that were levied against him, please?
I'm not sure whether it's a question out of his presentation, because we are saying
question for clarity. I will is it something that you miss on the clarification?
Mr. Chair, yes. The petitioner says that there were a lot of court cases against him. If you could just clarify what were the results of the court cases that you've just spoken about a few minutes ago. Thank you.
Honorable Kimby, Honorable Wana, I'm sorry, point of order, sir. I think you will give us the time to ask clarity of other things. Now, the petitioner has mentioned, then if we need clarity, due respect, will give us that clarity. Not now, I think let's allow the petitioner to proceed. Thank you.
Honorable Wana.
I think the issue they are raising is to say if something has not been clearly heard, please them said to get out before I comment, but for other general clarification, would then allow it after they've done. Thank you very much for your understanding. Continue, Mr. O'Hampton.
My ward committee also wouldn't take any queries, and it's notable that my ward committee, Ward 10, of its 5 members, 3 of them became councillors, and the remaining member of the committee remains the treasurer for the DA, and the other members are made up of, as far as we know, all DA constituents, including the ex-speaker and including his romantic partner. So whereas Mayor Bormorans refused the communication with me, eventually, despite promising answers, and sent a stern letter to me, breaking communication between the municipality and the DA with me, and referring me to the ward committee. The ward committee, I believe, is politically biased, and they would not accept my admission. I also reported it to the DA corruption hotline, which was actually on the website. I did take a screenshot of it. There was no response back from the DA, so provincially they haven't answered there, besides my letters. I also did it to the Eden corruption hotline, which also did not respond. I have contacted probably over 100 people who will not respond. And I cannot believe that there would be such a blanket denial of responsibility unless there actually has been interference at some level, a high level. I also became banned in the local newspapers. I still banned in 2 of them. I'm not mentioned. I believe that it is because all those newspapers receive advertising funding from the municipality, and it's particularly notable that the Knights of Tech Herald, when they gained a new editor who was actually forced out, was had the municipality's advertising radically reduced, and that the municipality called meetings with the head office of the newspaper group editors. Examples of that bias can be the speaker could publish a 900-word article against me in the newspaper, and I was not allowed to respond. It has also been used as a podium by the mayor and the deputy mayor, and it seems to be the current speaker of Nasna, Eleanor Spies, the previous ANC mayor.
She would make
yes. Correct. I have a lot of information with regards to the newspaper. Section 1, as presented by Ms. Hamble, was the ISE statement today. I wrote an article about that. I loaded it with fact. I provide the evidence. I submitted it to our local newspaper, as I did to other newspapers. The Cape Times might have given it a front story. The Isaac Pitt Herald's response was, you can't tell us what to write. They waited 1 week. The municipality called conference with them. And then they only wrote the municipality's version. They did not write anything. They did not mention me. They did not mention my evidence. And instead wrote an article with absolutely biased terminologies. Again, as I say, there's so much evidence in all these things. I'm just trying to brief over it. For me, it's been 5 years of difficulty. Came up. I submitted a petition to the municipality, had hundreds of people sign it, no response. I had my emails blocked by the municipality, I had proof that they blocked it. recently they unblocked some line, but not the main one. But I believe they only did that because at that stage Juan Easton was about to become municipal manager, but unfortunately did not result. The unblocking of those other emails has not resulted in any cooperation. My main email address still remains blocked. No response. It is also interesting that under that short-lived editor, an article was published with regards to ISDF and questioning that tender. The mayor's response to the newspaper was to threaten that, and I quote, that the Nasa municipality may choose to take legal steps against persons and all publications if they publish any information deemed defamatory about the municipality and its officials. It was no defamation. It was an article about a tender. This is the kind of response that we get in Nasa. There is a block out between the public and the administration and the councillors. The DA took down the Facebook website. I'm the strongest person on social media and the internet in my town. People understand that something's wrong, so people have subscribed. I often get more coverage than the newspaper, the municipality, and tourism combined. Actually, all the newspapers combine all of theirs, and if I write a serious topic, they can't reach the same amount of people that I do. This makes me a threat to the way things currently are. And it is interesting that the DA took down their Facebook page, and a page called Nice in the News came up, run anonymously, for postings that are anonymous, in support of the DA, and with the only original postings, DA adverts or articles against me, that just everything that has happened, including about what's happening here today and why it happened. I would like at some stage to go more into that and give you evidence to show you who's actually behind it. And I'm not comfortable doing that, but people are sitting behind me at the moment. This would at some stage affect the people who are involved against me. It is interesting to note that somebody related, well, I'll phrase it a different way, because I'm worried that this will then be taken and that it will be held against me in the court of law because I'm under a 60-day suspended sentence if I mention a personal relationship involving the deputy mayor. But the deputy mayor, which was supposed to be here today, and please, it's very notable that the people who were invited to this meeting are not here to
have a volume of questions.
Chair, I need clarity. You know, Mr. Hempel, Mr. Hempel has just mentioned that he's under probation of 60 days for mentioning the name of whoever that you said. Deputy Mayor, is it the Deputy Mayor? Now, I'm not sure if because we need verbal interaction with him. If the committee will allow him to continue with the submission, especially of the deputy mayor, legally, what implications will it be? Because now, as a committee, we will, for record purposes, we will need that information. So I'm just checking as to legally, aren't we as the committee going to put this him under another difficulties, or as it was the judgment of the court, and we conflicting with the judgment of the court as a committee.
Thank you, Honorable Mukwele. I'm sure we do know that the proceedings of Parliament, when we are engaging, asking questions and what have you, nobody can take that evidence as an evidence in the court of law. It doesn't work that way. You are protected when you talk to the Committee of Parliament. No piece of information can be taken out of this and used by any one of us, including those that are not here, to say this is what we have said in the portfolio committee. You will serve it somewhere not referring to the information you have given to us. Honorable Prime, I'm happy.
Honourable Metallurgist.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I first need the okay from you. May I pose a question, please, to the petitioner? Would it be possible at this time?
On
this specific matter, yes.
I'm sure for now, target just deal with where you haven't heard yet. When we come to the clarity seeking platform, all of that.
It's with regards to the specific matter. I just want to know.
All right. Okay. Proceed, Mr. Hampton. I'm sure what I was saying is you mention the name, you don't mention the name, nothing will be taken out of payment against you.
Thank you. I would like to point out that all the cases against me do not involve the merits of this petition. Those cases against me are harassment, defamation, etc. They do not involve the arguments that would be the result of my presentation.
Honourable Metallicus.
Sorry to interrupt you, sir. Chairperson, would you just repeat the last part of what you said? You cannot give any person permission to violate a court order. You, as an ordinary MP, and I say with the greatest of respect, and myself as an ordinary member, cannot give anyone for any purpose the authority to go in against a court order. It's improper. We cannot allow that, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I'm sure you know I'll never do that. You know with certainty that I'll never do that. But I'm saying for you to mention that I've got a dispute with Tovelani, it does not violate any court order. It doesn't. I'm saying sharing with other information, it has got nothing to do with violation of the court order. That's what I'm saying. Proceed, Mr. Hampton.
I can phrase it so that either way I'm in the clear, if I'm looking back at my report. Although the merits of this isn't being debated in court and the actual actions against me don't clarify any of this, it is interesting that all the people who have laid cases against me have been accused by me of having been involved in the maladministration and corruption of Niger Tourism. I think that connection has to be considered. Secondly,
just to remind you that try to move towards wrapping up. Your time, not my time, your time is against you in terms of the logistics and going back home.
Thank you, I'm literally at the end. The advocate who has appeared against me in some way or all the way, and at least on the behalf of five of these people, including politicians, is Advocate Seaton. So even in the magistrate's court, I am facing an advocate. Okay. That advocate has a relationship with the deputy mayor. I'm not going to tell you what that relationship is. But it was my question here, because the deputy mayor is supposed to be here today, to get around court order, I was going to ask you to ask her to clarify that relationship. There is a propaganda campaign being run against me. I have evidence of that, quite an extensive one. There is political hindrance, and there is unconstitutional blocking to access of information. And considering how large and severe these matters are, how can there not have been investigation? There is just too much involved that involves too many people in common. So I'm asking for this committee to please investigate Nasa Municipality and what is actually happening in our town. So thank you for letting me make this submission.
Thank you very much. Can we then have clarity-seeking questions where you are not sure of Honourable Makhalakis?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my question goes to
Honourable Mark.
You know, this has been, my apologies, this has been a long presentation. I was just asking for 5 minutes. Just please, keep on.
Can we finish the clarity seeking then have a 5 minute break? I agree with you, but I'm worried about if you have to leave. Okay. Please, I want to put my hand up.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Chairperson, my question goes to the granting of the order, if I understand correctly, that you on that the petitioner is not to mention any in any formal way the deputy mayor, if I understand correctly. Could you just explain to us what exactly the nature of this order is, and what were the grounds for the court granting such an order? Because having been an attorney myself, or being an attorney myself, I know that a court doesn't just make an order left, right, centre. It hears both parties, and it makes its filing based on facts. What are the grounds for granting this order, and what exactly is the nature thereof? Thank you.
There you go. You can respond, and then the city will become the next. Okay, if you're related to. Okay. Yeah, you can
add on. Mr. T, thank you. Just a question I asked earlier, if the petitioner can just give us the outcome of the several court cases that are against him while we're talking about the court case. Thank you.
Can you respond? Then all of you are going to talk to
me. Although I disagree with the angle taken from behind me, I will answer everything because I believe in transparency.
Honorable Mokwele, just
thank you. I think we don't have to do this thing as a personal attack to each other, especially from the DA side and a direct response by the petitioner. Because it's like it's a personal matter. It's no longer an interest of Naisna Manisalik. It's like somebody is attacking, they are attacking each other. Nonetheless, I would suggest that we ask questions, then he responds to our questions, not like one-on-one, then he responds, then the other one asks, then he responds. Let us take maybe five questions, and then after five questions, they respond, because there are two presentations. I think we are going to wrap up the two presentations, the questioning, and then they respond to us. That was, I think.
I hear and I appreciate your advice. You know, the reason why I was saying one-on-one is because unlike when we are questioning officials, government officials, we expect them to note them down. So we have got no guarantee whether Mr. Will you be comfortable, Mr. Hampton, if you list them one of the questions and respond to them thereafter, being five or six?
I have no problem with doing that.
Thank you very much. We'll take someone that might be. It's not a question. Okay.
Chairperson, also call for question. May I humbly request that you perhaps ask the petitioner to relax and not react. Because what we are trying to do, we have paid attentive attention for a simple reason that some of us believe to one thing, that no government can justly claim authority unless it's based on the need of the people, not part of these people. We're here to listen, relax, take your time to respond, but don't react. You are going to be defocused unnecessarily. That would be my humble question.
Thank you, Dr. Martin. Honorable Shetty, you are the first on the list.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Just again, clarification. Firstly, some of the allegations here are quite serious. My question will be, has the petitioner made any efforts to speak to corporate governance? Because if you look at what's in this documentation, it is more to a COPTA issue. And I'm surprised that we had no mention of COPTA in this, whether there was any interaction with them. Secondly, that person, the petitioner did make mention that he has met many people from the EA leadership in that region. I just want to find out did he make any approach to ANC regional leadership as well. And the fact that he seems to be protecting the interests, and as by his own submission, he has quite a high profile in the media. So I'm sure that the people will want to have some answers and whether he's explored that avenue as well. And yeah, I'll leave it there for now, Chair. Thank you.
Honourable Tembe, Honourable Mokwele, in that order, I'm sure then will, Honourable Mwadi then will allow him to speak to them, then we'll take another petition.
Thank you very much,
you, my good lady. You said Mr. Easton, he was, or she was supposed to, is one that is supposed to be elected, or is one who is, there's certain Mr. Rangwana, who thinks that she or he must be one who's supposed to be appointed. But you're surprising what done. The interview was done by two, was done by two persons. It's the deputy and the mayor for the appointment of Mr. Isene, for Mr. Isene. I want to declare it on that. And then the second one, you also mentioned the minister, MPC Bradel, who had a hand or in the tender, or who did give answer to, or you are involved in the tender, probably something like that. Can you give me a little bit of clarity? How was Minister Bader in this case? Thank you very much.
Honorable Mokwele.
My questions are two, if not three. To Mr. Hampton, you spoke about being blocked by municipality. May you please elaborate on that, because we don't understand when you say you have been blocked by municipality to do what? To speak, to attend, to community activities, to write about my municipality or what? The other thing I want to check is Naizna municipality a coalition of DA and ANC? If so, it is clear that Butukunape is happening in both parties, and for an individual from a community to raise this critical and sensitive information about a municipality that is run by two big political parties of the Republic, it clearly shows that
remember, what we are busy doing, we are interacting with the presentation of the petitioner. The latter speaker is now drawing us to a letter for state, and I don't think it's proper. Where we need to debate, let it be enough for us. I'm saying, there's in no way where the petitioner has made mention of ANC, DA, coalition running the municipality. It's irrelevant, honestly. And we stick to the matter and not politicize this matter, please.
Thank you, Chair. Whether you like it or not, these are politics. These are clear politics. The municipality is run by, I want clarity whether the municipality of Naima is run by DA and ANC. If so, that's why I said, Honorable Mohabi. If so, it is clear.
I think, Honorable Mokwele, you are still in order when you are asking that question. But once you started to say, if so,
yes,
that you are out of order.
Yes.
That deliberation reserved, we are going to allow you that space. You will deliberate at the appropriate time.
And we will engage.
And you will be orderly, Honorable Mokwele. Honorable
Mukwege. Thank you. You are both corrupted. Thank you, Chair.
That
the Naizna is run by DA and ANC.
You are all corrupt.
And it's clear it's corruption.
How do I corrupt? How am I corrupted?
Thank you.
Can you withdraw that one, Honorable Mukwege?
No,
I won't withdraw because I haven't deliberated on the matter. When we deliberate, maybe it is a point where I should withdraw, I will then withdraw. Then the question is Naizna municipality run by ANC and DA on Thursday?
Honorable Mokwele, I'm saying this reference to us to say you are corrupt is the one that I'm saying, can you please withdraw that part?
I'm referring to ANC and DA, therefore I want withdraw. I will withdraw if the debate allows me. Because now we are not debating. I want to withdraw those rules. Let's allow the debate to come first, then I will withdraw, Chair. Please, bear with me.
Please, I'm begging you. The inference to say you are corrupt. While we are getting clarity, you are then saying we are corrupt. I'm not sure how did you arrive at that.
Yes.
Nothing that can justify that. I'm saying just withdraw that. But if during the debate you found that all of us we have been corrupted by listening to this, then you will then say it. But not for now. Can you please make us to move?
Chair, let us not waste time. I'm saying, I'm requesting with the Chair that statement, we will deal with it when we are debating. Now we are not debating you, that we are not debating, we are asking clarity seeking questions. That is the question that I'm asking, is the National Municipality Coalition of ANC and PA. That is my question. Yes, thank you very much. That utterance I want to withdraw up until we get into debate. Thank you.
No, Honorable Mukule, let's not complicate things where they're not supposed to be. Your question for clarity is very, objective. All of us would want to get it from there. But what I'm saying is not good. It to refer to this meeting that you are corrupt. That's an area that I'm saying, can you remove that?
Chair, I'm not referring to the meeting, I was referring to the ANC and DA. That's why I'm saying we are not debating. At the point where we are debating, I will then, when the facts are put on the table, I will then either withdraw or not withdraw.
Honorable,
thank you, Chair.
I fully understood you. You are saying you are referring to DA and ANC. There's no DA and ANC in this debate, it's a committee. When you are said you are corrupt, you are referring to a committee. And the committee has not even taken a decision. We are still getting details in.
Now,
for the corruption part, I'm begging with you, can you just remove that part? At an appropriate time when we will be debating things, if there's anyone who's corrupt, you will then be able to say, this person is corrupt. But
Chair,
where we are, I don't
Chair,
know.
Chair, through you, Chair. The statement that Mr. Hampton said put before us is that it's either the chief whip of the ANC and the mayor of DA. Now, my question was that, is the municipality governed by the coalition of ANC and DA? No, I want to withdraw, Chair. Please, I want to withdraw. I will withdraw when we debate. This one is clear. I want to withdraw, Chair.
I then ask you not to continue with this meeting if you are not going to do that.
Which rule are you using?
I'm saying to you...
Do you want me to go?
I'm saying... Can I ask you not to continue with this meeting if you are not prepared to do what I'm saying to it? Honorable Mukwele, we need all of us, we are human.
Chair, I withdraw.
Thank you very much, my dear. Thank you very much.
I'm withdraw because I'm interested in this, not because of any other matter. That one, it must be clear. I'm not withdrawing because I want to please anyone. I'm withdrawing because you want to change me from a meeting that I have an interest in. No, I'm not defocusing.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mwadi, can you proceed your time? Thank you, Honorable Mukwele. Thank you. Yes, it's you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Chairperson, just to start with Ms. Susan. Ms. Susan, you indicated that in terms of your qualifications, you are a lawyer and not in the profession. I just want to check with you two things. You indicated in one incident that there was a letter from the province which had a particular paragraph which was putting the municipality as if nothing wrong has happened. Who was the author of the letter? And when the letter was corrected, who was the author of the letter? And I just want to check. If the letter has been written by one person, why the earlier letter was having that particular paragraph which was not conducive to the material conditions on the ground, and what prompted a change when you try and establish. Then two, there's a stage where you spoke about a municipal employee who had a vested interest in ISDF, and to me it appeared as if the said official happened to play two roles, the one of the referee and the player. If perhaps one can get married to who this official was and what are the designation of the official. Then lastly to you, there was some stage where you spoke about a report that was not published. I just want to check what report specifically was supposed to be published, which was not published. And lastly on this, the role of the province on the ISDF, if we are going to be asked to say, put it in a point form, what would be the specific issues from the side that would say, yeah, the whole of the province is also questionable? Coming Chairperson to Mr. Hampton. Mr. Hampton, I think I feel pity for you, especially with the frustrations that you highlighted, that you have blocked, the normal cover.
Honorable Mark, we don't feel pity for you. We will.
I withdraw.
Thank you very much.
No, I withdraw, Honorable Mark. Mr. Hampton, in most instances, we have been making reference to irregularities, where all these irregularities are appearing from the Auditor General's report. If yes, which year financially was that AG's report? You further spoke about the political interference. If one would say, in brief, tell us this one, you make mention of Mr. Lord to cite an example. Mr. Lord played an interference in this. What did he does specifically that would always relate to that? You stipulated that there's been political interference. So I just want to check who specifically you suspect that there's a possibility of interference in all these matters. Who are they and what can be the possible roles that these individuals might have played? The public protector issue. You said the public protector is Mr. Bose. And at some stage, it's on record today, that you said Mr. Bose indicated that there was pressure from bosses. Official admitted that he never mentioned who are his bosses. I just want to take further. After that response from Mr. Bose, who happened to be the public protector, saying to you the pressure from his bosses, what recourse did you take based on that statement? Because to us, we see the public protector as an institution, chapter 9 institution, where all members of the community, regardless of your status, whenever you are faced with any challenge, you always resort for assistance from such institutions. So I just want to check. You are simply saying to us, you never got assistance from the side of the public protector. Instead, you got a response to say, there's pressure, hence no further investigation on all these allegations that you put forth. I just want to check, was there any other further steps, particularly on the public protector that you took, or you only got to us as the parliament? Lastly, from my side, Chairperson, you indicated to us that there have been numerous petitions submitted to the municipality. Your emails were blocked. ultimately others were relieved, but so your main one remained blocked. You also spoke about the, let me first start with this one, of the municipality. In case of the municipality where you were blocked, was there any further step taken by you, either going to the province, because municipalities are accountable to COCTA, MEC, was there any stage where you engaged the provincial department around this matter? I'm saying this because in one instance you mentioned Honorable Helen Zille to say in one public meeting you raised your issues and you never got joy in terms of responses from the head of Mayor Helen Zille. Lastly, from my head chair, the newspaper. When you got frustrated from the side of the newspaper, local newspapers, that were depriving you a right, especially where an allegation is made about you, you have the right, but there's a right entitled to you in terms of all the Algan Pate. But any person that alleges about a person, that person has got the right to clarify an allegation or either agree or disagree. In this case, you indicated to the committee that you are frustrated. You could not get an opportunity to be afforded an opportunity to express yourself, which is also your constitutional right, you know. So I just want to check from the side. Are you saying that particular frustration of also the local newspaper that deprived you the right to respond? Did you take that matter further? Is the one of the municipality, is also this one of the newspaper? Thank you very much.
I've noticed that Honorable Mokwele omitted
something. I've omitted one question of the CADA document that was lost. According to you, you said documents were lost and then the very same tender was readmitted. And then I want to check whether the specifications of the previous documents that were lost were they the same as the ones that was readvertised? That is the question I wanted to thank you.
Maybe as you are coming to answer, maybe to conclude that question, was there any police case that was opened against the loss of those documents? I'm sure let them answer this part, then we'll come to the second question. I'm sure there are many. My scribe here said it's 49 questions.
Any one of you can...
Thank you. Firstly, the question about Mr. Easter's appointment and the interviews. The municipal managers posted advertised twice. The first occasion, Mr. Easton did not apply. That is when the municipality decided to go out again to try and find a more representative candidate. The second time Mr. Easton applied, the committee that shortlisted and interviewed the candidates comprised of the mayor, the deputy mayor, the chief whip of the ANC, and maybe I can at this point answer the question, the ANC and the DA are not in coalition. DA is governing now on its own. And Werner Weybrands, who was supposed to be an independent person. These were the people who interviewed the candidates. I felt the only thing that made Mr. Easton excel above the others is they scored higher in the interviews, and I felt it was unfair to the other candidates because the mayor and deputy mayor work with Mr. Easton on a daily basis and have done so since the DA started running the town. The deputy mayor, in fact, was the portfolio councillor for finance. So Mr. Easton was the manager with directly under her. I hope that clarified that aspect. Then Mr. Bridell's involvement. In terms of the legislation, once a municipal manager is appointed, or any senior manager or director, within 14 days, the proceedings have to be sent to the MEC for local government, which is Minister Bridell. And this includes the shortlisting, the job advertisement, everything which was done. And I found it concerning that these documents that were sent to the MEC Bridell showed that Mr. Easton's qualification was foreign and had not been verified. It was in fact reported in January that it would take about 6 weeks to verify it, and in April this was sent to Mr. Bridell and it had not been verified and he never questioned it. It's only in August. Yeah. It was submitted in April 2014 and the documents that were submitted to him said in January that his qualification, this is 4 months prior, that the qualification had not been verified and that this would take 6 weeks. So I don't know why he did not question the fact that a qualification had not been verified. Also, you are not actually supposed to shortlist a candidate if the qualification is not verified. So Mr. Easton shouldn't even have been shortlisted until his qualification had been verified. And I do believe that, with respect, Minister Bridell should have questioned the verification of the qualification. I think Mr. Nkwana, he applied in the second round. He did not apply in the first round when Mr. Easton also applied. And the municipality had now found what they're looking for, a suitably qualified candidate who was not white, with respect. Mr. Nkwana had a doctorate in public administration. Mr. Easton had a B degree in public administration. Mr. Nkwana spoke 3 or 4 languages. Mr. Easton spoke 1 language. English. He's actually Scottish. He's got a South African. He's got a permanent resident, but he's actually Scottish citizen. Then there were questions about the last tender document. Yes, what happened is the fleet manager examined the tender documents after the tenders had been opened, and mysteriously Nisman's tender document disappeared. The tender was then cancelled. There were 1 or 2 changes to the specifications. I cannot remember what they were, but the real reason why the process had to be aborted was, of course, Nisman's tender document went missing. Nisman did then again tender in the second round when it was advertised again, and I don't know if you want me to go into detail about this. What happened is, I'm afraid I don't want to spend too much time, but this is a very important thing. What Nisman Municipality had been doing since 2011, when the preferential procurement regulations had been changed, is they had been unlawfully awarding, tenders would be scored on price and BEE, and then they would look and see if there's a local company that's within 11% in a tender above R1 million and 25% in a tender below R1 million, regardless of whether that company had any triple BEE points or whether it was 100% white-owned company, and they would actually award a tender to a local company completely illegally, completely disregarding the Preferential Procurement Act. And this carried, I pointed it out to them. There was a construction tender where this happened. There were many tenders. This was pointed out by the Auditor General. And this tender, again, the Bid Adjudication Committee wanted to buy the vehicle from Nisman Nissen rather than the Cape Town company, which was also Nissen, that were much cheaper, the Cape Town company. They wanted to pay more to buy from Nisman Nissen. And fortunately, this was May 2015. The legal manager advised them that it was illegal. But they had actually been doing this illegally since 2011. In fact, completely and utterly disregarding tenders that were legitimately won by companies that were owned by historically disadvantaged individuals and that have scored the highest points. And they were awarding teams to quite nice companies, quite owned with no BEE points whatsoever and who were more expensive. Okay, then there was another question about, if I may just mention a point on a blocking of Mr. Hampton. I just want to explain to this committee, Mr. Hampton and I do not work together. But I was in an award committee meeting where the municipal manager, Lauren Waring, in fact loudly bragged to the ward councillor that had blocked Mr. Hampton's emails. She actually bragged about it. She was quite proud of it. And subsequent to that meeting, I approached the DA councillors. And I said to them, are you aware of the fact that the administration are blocking Mr. Hampton's emails? And Councillor Wasserman, she's no longer there, said to me, yes, she is, and why should they not do it? I said to her, how can you block a person's emails? She said, because he insults us. So I said to her, you can block his emails to your personal email account, But you cannot block his emails to the municipality. It's completely and utterly unacceptable. Thereafter, I do believe they stopped that after Lauren Waring left. I don't know. But it's not an allegation by Mr. Hampton. Lauren Waring openly bragged about it in a public meeting, and it was confirmed to me by Councillor Wasserman, who, with respect, is a legally qualified person and should have known better. Then I'll move on to another point. Sorry, I just want to see what this is. I'm about to read my handwriting. Yes, the letter from the provincial... The letter from the provincial government, I might just explain, the investigation was mostly conducted by the provincial treasury department, and I must compliment them on very thorough work there. The Western Cape Provincial Treasury Department really did thorough work. Then a report was compiled, but it was signed off by the MP for local government, Minister Bridell. The letter ended with a paragraph that said none of the deficiencies in the process affected the outcome of the process. It was, with respect, completely and utterly an irrational conclusion. I then wrote to the mayor, to MEC Bridell, to Provincial Treasury, and I set up in detail why the conclusion was completely and utterly irrational and unacceptable. And I was then told by Mr. Pulser, who is in the local government office of the MEC, he is in the administration, that when he received my letter in which I said that the conclusion was irrational, he realized that Minister Bridell had accidentally signed the wrong letter. Now, I'm not going to comment on whether, but the word to me were, we realized that there were two letters that Minister Bridell had to sign, and he accidentally signed the wrong letter. But the Pulser then advised me that they took out that paragraph, because they were now faced with a situation where they had to come and explain to another municipality why they said that all those deficiencies did not affect the process. So they said, oopsie, we had sent the wrong letter, so they gave Minister Bridell the same letter to sign, but they took out a paragraph that said it did not affect the outcome of the process. So both letters were signed by Minister Bridell, and apparently the first one, that paragraph, I don't know how it got in there, but he signed a letter with the wrong paragraph. After I queried, and I said it was irrational, I said, how can you say that the tender that was awarded to the wrong bidder, and where there's a conflict of interest, how can you say it did not affect the process? Then I was told telephonically by Mr. Pulser that somehow Mr. Bridell signed the wrong letter, and that the meaning actually being it did affect the outcome of the process. I hope that clarifies that.
Can I also request that we try to be straight to...
Yes, sorry.
And yes. It's no longer yes. Fast, please.
Yes, the employee with the employee with the interest in the ISDS, Mr. Mightmorn Brown, the director of planning, before he worked for the municipality, he was a town planner in private practice. He objected to the spatial development framework that was drafted when he was in private practice. He now became director of planning, and he basically oversaw the appointment of all the objectors to the current spatial development framework to review it. I don't know if that makes us understand that. Thank you. And there was another question. After I obtained the full ISDS report from the provincial government, which was obtained through the public protector, the mayor did not take it back to the council to say that there were problems with the process. She instead just issued a press release to say everything was actually fine and we're going ahead with the process. So after asking for the investigation and the finding is that there were deficiencies, she tried not just to tell council there were problems, but simply said, well, everything is fine. I can give you a copy of the press release. I've got one here if you're interested.
We'll require that.
Yeah, thank you. And I think that's... Nothing else.
I will rush as quick as I can.
Oh,
sorry. I've got to everybody else. Just to answer the question, was there an SAPS investigation into the tender that was lost? As far as we know, which is one of the questions that we would like answered. Regarding the MM appointments, it's interesting to note that Mayor Vollmerans stated in council that they could not appoint Municipal von Easton as municipal manager until they gained the full report on the IFEF. The only implication from that is that Easton needed to be cleared of any irregularity with regards to ISDF before he could be appointed. Instead, she was sent a summary of the report by NC Riddell, which then conflicts with the fact that he had, they sent the wrong letter and it had to be resent and he had to sign it again, because a summary was sent to the municipality which said that it could go ahead, even despite the listing 10 of deficiencies. Then, despite not getting the report, Mayor Vollmerans at the next council meeting appointed Easton as municipal manager, and she did not answer the question, well, why did you not provide the full report? Why did you say that the municipal manager appointment was reliant on that report, and why are you now appointing him to fight that? Not all of what we presented here regards the Auditor General. I think the Auditor General needs to be questioned. Some of them have been Ms. Campbell's own investigations and some have been mine. I've literally been on the tourism story for 5 years. With regards to contacting other people, I have, but it is very hard to get a response. I can show you tons of emails. I have contacted both sides of the political sphere.
Can we get copies of those letters that you sent to them?
Yes. If you look at my evidence, you will find tons. After you've gone through that, I can then elaborate further. I contacted COCTA. COCTA did respond with regard to the councillor payments, i.e. to ANC Chief Whip Stephen Frisch and ANC Councillor Clive Whitboy, and COCTA said that the payments were illegal. I did send that on to municipality and was of course ignored, and I did send that to both the ANC and DA with regard to these studies, the degree studies. They did not do an investigation into it. They just gave me the fact that in light of this, this would be improper. I would have to get you the exact email to get you the exact terminology. I did contact the Auditor General with regards to National Tourism. We had a meeting even before they started the process. I was told that they would come back to me with regards to it, and when I did get a response, they said, no, it's not within our mandate to check National Tourism. Auditor General. But if you highlight a problem, the Auditor General is meant to include it in their mandate. With regards to the public protector, all you have to do is read the facts that I've submitted, read what was submitted to the public protector, read the municipal manager's letter to the public protector in which she lies, and then read the letter that accepts the lie, to come to your own conclusion. There's no such thing as any organizational sphere of our government that is immune to corruption. The people we revere within different fields, and no one body can be made to have an opinion about it because of one individual. I respect the Public Protector's Office, and I'm a big fan of Tuli Manufela, but I'm not a fan of what's happening in Georgia at the moment. I did report the George office to Public Protector in Pretoria, and despite follow-up, they haven't done anything about it. It is interesting that the questions that are coming from the DA on this committee are not with regard to the merits of this report, but it's definitely to be a continuation of the DA's attempt to discredit me. I believe in 100% transparency, so I'll answer anything. I have faced all these court cases without a lawyer. I cannot afford lawyers, I'm an activist. I've had to learn a very hard way through failures with regard to some of the cases. None of these cases got to discuss the merits of this. And my evidence was totally rejected in the case of the Sea of Tourism against the civil suit because on a technicality, because I said I didn't list evidence properly. So 67 pages of my affidavit and 200 pages of evidence was not reviewed in court.
Yes, same one.
I get clarity. There's a provision for legal aid. Did you attempt to get an attorney from the legal aid? Were you deprived or what happened?
Initially, your question is, did you not use a lawyer because you did not want to? I'm sure that's why it must be.
Firstly, legal aid, I did go to them in the beginning. They only come to our town once a month, which would be insufficient to build any case, and they did not turn up that month that I went. Apparently, they went to a funeral. Two, I contacted the head of legal aid in George, a man I had never met, never spoken to, and he screamed and swore at me on the phone. It was quite bizarre.
Honourable McAlecky.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, there's just one aspect. Sorry, I can't see you properly. There's just one aspect that I want to clear out before the petitioner continues. He made a comment, and it's the second time now, but he specifically made the comment that the question that I posed was an attempt from the DA to discredit him. I would like him to withdraw that, because the comment that he makes put a question mark on my integrity as a member of this panel. It is an assumption that I am not impartial, as I should be, as a member of this panel, and in fact it is a personal attack. I would like him to withdraw that. I, as a member of this panel, is objective, and I ask a question to get clarity on a specific issue so that I can do my job properly. Thank you.
May I respond?
Sure.
None of the questions that have been asked from behind me were actually to further an understanding of some very serious matters. Instead, by asking about court cases that are irrelevant to this report, can only be determined as a way to try to discredit it, because they will be very aware of what happened.
I'm still repeating my point. The petitioner must be objective and be relaxed, and answer questions that are not personal. Avoid one-on-one communication with the DA, because it is clear that somehow it's like you are accusing the DA or the DA is accusing you. So let us, we are in a fact-finding mission here. We are not favoring either of them, especially myself. I'm not favoring either of the two parties. Now, I'm requesting that you answer the questions that we have requested you to answer, and then don't be personal to them. They will raise issues, because that municipality belongs to the DA. Obviously, they will want to protect their constituency and their career. So you must just focus on what you are doing and forget about the police. We are appealing to you.
Thank you, Honorable Mugwela. I think, Mr. Hempen, what you need to refrain from is to go into personal and respond to things that you think that are too personal. Deal with issues that will help the community to have
a... Chairperson, on a point of order, that was not what I raised with you. If you go and look at your committee rules very carefully, it says that in these hearings, as in the House, an attack on the personal integrity of any member is not allowed and should be withdrawn. I am a member of this panel as a member of Parliament, and the comments made by the petitioner was an attack on my personal integrity as an objective member of this panel, and I wish him to please, or I wish you to request him to withdraw in terms of the rules of this House.
Thank you very much. Can you do that so that we proceed with him?
I will do it for the sake of speeding up the process.
Unreservedly, let it not be conditional on conditions of making progress. Proceed.
The fact is that I have contacted people on both sides, the ANC and the DA, and COPE. Right. I contacted everybody that I could possibly contact. I've contacted everybody that I can possibly contact. But I have addressed the majority of their correspondence to the DA, because they are the leader of my town. And I've gone up through the levels and I've gone to provincial.
Chairperson, thank you very much. As I was keeping quiet, please, Chairperson, give us the guidance. Here, we don't, I'm not happy with Mr. Hempen, so must not be put as if he is in court here. He is not in court. What I was expecting is that we put clarity, and this is the very biggest, big,
been a busy day for us. Tomorrow must be here, relax. Tomorrow's got a big day. Please, Mr. President, try to round up this meeting.
Thank you. Present to your answer, respond so that we finish this session as much as we can. I know Honorable Mokulu would want somewhere.
With regards to the action, I have told the newspaper via email that I am taking to the ombudsman.
And I've been told that also your transport is already waiting.
I'm going to miss that. I'll try not to miss that. With regards to court cases, I actually included some of that in the evidence. And I have been found guilty of defamation. I can't understand how I've been found guilty of things such as saying you're too sexy for your furniture to a politician has relevance to this case. Only where they mention the merits of my accusations with regards to narcissism and put that on trial would it be relevant here. I have also written about all of this extensively because I don't hold anything back and I practice transparency. Anybody here can do any search on my website, narcissistkid.org, and find information to these questions. The fact is that, isn't it bizarre that so many people that I've accused of being involved in the Nazi tourism saga have laid personal cases against me with regards to defamation and harassment? Isn't it relevant that one person who has virulently defended our leaders, I have a protection order against a man that the police refused to uphold, I believe that's because I'm a critic of the police as well, is actually represented by the same advocate. By putting a lot of cases onto somebody such as me who doesn't have any money, it has to be considered that that is intimidation because it's made my life a living hell, which I'm sure it was meant to be. All I want this committee to do is to read my submission and accompanying evidence and judge it on it. These are grave issues. No matter how many times I go to court, and apparently there's going to be another 8 against me, all right, will not change the fact that these matters need to be addressed. I support no party, and I'm a virulent defender of independence, and I speak of that.
Okay, thank you. I'm tempted to say we should release you, and any further questions we'll forward to the secretary to get clarified, because we might find ourselves now violating the proper logistical arrangements that you are affected on. Can I check, members, are you agreeing with me that we release him and any further question will go to him through the center? Thank you very much. Yeah, no, that's why I'm doing this. I could understand that we can go on and on and on. Thank you very much, and have a safe drive back home. For any further inquiry, the secretary will come to you on behalf of the committee to if we need further clarity on any other issue that you might not have. Thank you for coming. Thank you for believing in Parliament can help to, you know, rescue you out of the conditions you have been seeing you in. Thank you very much.
Thanks to everybody, because this is the first time there's actually been any hearing on these matters in 5 years. So very much appreciated.
Can we then move forward? We will then take the provincial department. I've been told that the treasury rep is again under pressure in terms of time. Can we start with you, if that is the case? Before that, you wanted that comfort break, Honorable Mark.
Yes.
3 minutes just to go and come then. Thank you very much. Let's not take much because time is not in our side.
Sure, we can do in the next 45 minutes.
Thank you.
Okay. Can I plead with all of you that you have got a specific area where you are going to zoom in? Let's go straight into there without... I know you have heard a lot. You want to talk to everything, which is not what I would expect you to do. Can you start with the treasure and the finance of the province?
Okay. You allow me, I'll just give an introduction and then my colleague of the finance section will speak specifically on the ISDF. From our side, the bulk of these issues are actually colonized by the municipality, but as it was pointed out by the speakers, there are also areas where the province definitely has a mandate, and that is amongst others on the ISDF, the appointment of the MM as pointed out to you.
It's important to tell me who you are coming from. For purpose of recording now, we're dealing with exactly.
Jefferson, I'm Michael Brevis. I'm in the Department of Local Government, so I fall under the auspices of Minister Bridell. I also don't deal with everything that's been discussed here, but so from our side, as I've indicated, the bulk of the issues are nicer. We have a certain mandate, especially with some of these issues, and what we would like to have is the opportunity to respond to this committee in writing, because it's very difficult to do this in detail here. But saying that, I would like to, if you allow us, that the colleague here from can speak on the ISDF from the BJ side.
Thank you. How much time will you want to send us a written response?
See, I will be guided by the committee. You know exactly what you would like and how you would like to speak.
Would it be fair if we sent by next week Friday that to have that response?
Yeah, I think that's a bit early.
It's a bit
early. That's a bit early. That's a very substantive stuff which we would like to give our attention to.
Honorable one, then Mukwele will follow.
I appeal that we must accept that proposal. But that proposal must be coupled with time frame of 3 weeks from today. And the time when he's making those submissions, would like to highlight all these audit queries as at less thorough and the expenditure according to those financial years. And when he committed that, must present it by himself so that we can make some more clarity. Because all those expenditures, I'm sure they are going to be guided by the framework and the procedures and legal issues around the issues of municipalities, because I'm sure it's a part of thank you very much, person.
Thank you very much. Ke dumelana le se honorable wana a fetang go se bua sa gore re ba fena go mare ke farologana le ene ka ntla e lengwe ya gore e nne 3 weeks. Ke nagana gore e nne 14 days. Gore ke re 14 days is because ke naga gore di-issue tse di raisitsweng ba department-e e na le kitso ya tsone. Therefore, ga go tlhokege gore ba santsane ba ya kwa le kwa ba ile go batlana le information e leng gore ga eo at their disposal. It won't assist us if we force them to answer us today, because we will re tlabe re ba baka mo ka fotlape ga kgatelelo e sa tlhokegeng. Ba baye ba ile go tsaya se se leng teng, se se leng maleba gore re kgone gore ga re dira determination, e be re etsa determination based on informed information. Ke a leboga.
Last thing on this, Honorable Moati.
Chairperson, I just want to get clarity. The department Chairperson, when they were invited, what was the content of the letter? Before we can conclude anything. Because I'm afraid at times we must not rush into things or rush to make a decision without fair understanding what is prompting a postponement or submission. Can we get clarity on that?
The invitation was covered with the
petitions that we received attached to that. But I guess what is key, honorable members, you don't forget that this hearing is one of those that we have been given timeline that in a written message to was storing. We have to respond for the people who has you know, this thing. I would urge that it's fine, let's give them to that other week, Friday. I don't know what is the date, but I will plead with you that you do everything possible to put those, you know, respond as much as you. 19th. Yes, on the 19th of February. Thank you very much. Honorable one.
Listen, no, I wanted to put this thing straight. I'm not against about what Honorable Mhabi is saying, but he was upset. The time the department say they don't have a written document in front of them. And it's then the department requested that they want to make a thorough report to us. If we are sent to 19, we'll meet them in National. With a full report.
I think what will happen, once was given us the response on the 19th, we'll look at the content. If there's anything that we want you to clarify, we will again get back to you. But I would appreciate it. On the 19th, you can provide us with the necessary information. And we make progress, honorable member.
Within due respect, my apologies. I don't differ with honorable one. But I want to test out this. If the petitioners and the respondents were given documents, yet we are seated here, then an indication is that they are not ready to present because it's not written. And since it's not a matter that you can just overlook. If petitioners were able to prepare themselves, why didn't they prepare themselves? Because I'm saying this thing, if you are dealing with a petitioner who has been consistently saying, we've been making submissions, no response. Submissions, no response. I'm saying let us not find ourselves in the same arena where tomorrow we create precedents of people that are in Sahon. Here they are here before the committee and are not ready to present.
Thank you, honorable Mahdi. I think it's just a comment. Can we then work for agreed on the 19th for what your details come to us? But like we have agreed by giving you an opportunity now to flag on those that you lack about.
Jay, can you allow me just to comment, please?
Sure.
Okay. The one is that I was sitting in my office last month at 6 o'clock when I received these petitions. The first one came a few days earlier, I think 2 days earlier. Last night I received the one specifically also from Mr. Susan Campbell. That's the first time I saw it. And we were also informed that the meeting was moved from 2 o'clock to 10 o'clock. The other point that Jefferson I would just like to make, and that is the province can deal with all those stuff that is within its mandate. Because in the first instance, for example, one of the honorable members indicated, you know, specific amounts, etc. We will have to get that from us now. Because we are got an oversight function, so we deal with certain stuff specific, but other stuff indirectly. So I just want to make that point as well.
Chairperson, that is why it was important for us to get this knowledge. Because at times we might post those only to find that when it's an explanation, it's an internal matter that needs to be corrected. And I'm saying it's important at times not just to rush to a conclusion. Because if the respondents are saying they only received information hardly 72 hours, it's an embarrassment, Chairperson. I think one of the halakhis, from time to time, is always raising a concern. You are equally disadvantaging the petty and the respondents, and equally depriving us of the committee to raise data on this matter. And as I'm saying, it's unacceptable, Chairperson. For the respondent to be given documents hardly yesterday, yet you expect them to appear before us. I'm saying, this is supposed to be dealt with, Chairperson, because it's not amount to raise full expenditure.
I think in terms of you don't need even to respond to this, you know that it wasn't supposed to be that way. Honorable one.
Chairperson, early of things, we have finished this deliberation, but I wanted to stress or emphasize that the person who's going to make this documentation must present it as now so that we can get clarity on that particular time.
I think it's an internal arrangement that one can we leave it for ourselves. Is there anything that you wanted to flick on?
Yeah, this is my colleague on the ISDF, so I give you a comment on that if you were in our
Sure. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I may just add that we were not even notified that the meeting was changed. I learned by chance that it was moved forward to 10 o'clock. I'm representing Dr. Ivan Meyer, the MEC for Finance, and the only matter where we can contribute is the one on the ISDF. Soon after the election in 2000...
I have forgotten to say who you are. The rest you have done them perfectly.
Apologies, Chair. I'm Estienne Pretorius. I'm head of the Ministry of Finance. Soon after Dr. Meyer took office in May 2014, when he was appointed MEC of Finance, the previous MEC Minister Windley drew our attention to the fact that the mayor of Knysna requested an investigation into the ISDS tender. There was a written request from the mayor. Our MEC then wrote to Minister MEC Bradell, who is the local government MEC, and we recommended to him, I'm sure the committee knows that, insofar as the
MEC... Hang on, Honourable One. If you can sit it off for a minute,
that's right, Yeah. Listen, we propose that these two presentations must be prepared for that 19th. Because now, if he is doing that, I've got no input in front of me. I'm appealing that all what he's supposed to be saying here must come with a full report, issues of tender, issues of awarding that tender, so that we'll be clear or as a committee, so that we can have an informed background on it.
Are you suggesting that the approach with the...
Yes.
With the secretary be an overall approach that we are requesting the provincial government departments to respond in that way.
Yes.
Honorable Mokwele.
I'm saying if the gentleman is ready, why should we wait for another day? He said we are here to work.
I think present what you have.
Present.
Okay.
Chairperson, we recommended to MEC Gradell, who is the lead agent in terms of the MSMA, to put together a provincial task team to investigate the ISDS. On that, such a task team was subsequently established. On the task team served local government, our internal provincial legal services, as well as the head of our procurement within provincial treasury, Mr. Isaac Smith, who is present with me here today. After the provincial task team was established, it went to Knysna and it interviewed various witnesses and it collated information and put together a report.
Yes. Do you have a written presentation that you are dealing with?
Not a written presentation, responding to the petitioner and the scandal.
Second, as much as you are responding, can you go also and receive it in a written form what you are saying and forward to us also on the 19th? So.
Sure.
Honorable question.
But I think we
No, we don't. I'm not stopping him.
Because questions were asked and he has an obligation to answer and clarify as the report is another bit. There are allegations that are made
that department there. So they've got a right to clarify us and then to submit a written report that we will engage with later. We have listened to the allegations. Now we need the clarity of another side of the story. We have heard another side of the story. We must hear another side of the story. And then he must bring the report. We are still saying on the 19th the report must come. So can we give the man a
proceed with the response?
Okay, the provincial task team had interviews inter alia also with Ms. Campbell, and subsequently a report was provided from Treasury side to the local government's provincial department. At that time, they submitted the documents to the Knysna municipality, and Knysna municipality contested the work of the provincial treasury to an extent. And also they provided information that we did not have initially, such as local procurement policies and so on. And some of the so-called deficiencies that we mentioned in that report were also attended to by the municipality. There were further engagements with them, and as far as I have it, it is still work in progress, the ISDF matter. I was recently contacted by the Public Protector's Office, and I gained the impression that they are now also investigating this matter, or wanted to determine whether they should investigate it. I reported this to MEC Mayor. I just wanted to add two other matters, and this is that the whole supply chain management area, as you would probably know, is a difficult and a complex environment, and it's due to constant change. There are currently, and there have been changes during 2015 to the legislative framework. And Dr. Meyer, as the MEC of Finance, together with my colleague here, have arranged a workshop for all the supply chain managers of all 30 municipalities in the Western Cape, and to address some of the challenges. And Meisner also attended that workshop in the Bito municipality during November of 2015. Many of the issues that came up in the ISDS matter were also discussed, and we attempted to give guidance to the municipalities, including Meisner, at the November workshop. I just also wanted to add that although the councillors themselves do not participate in the actual procurement exercise, obviously as political leaders of the council, they require goods to be procured, and we offered to Knysna municipality through the mayor that our procurement officials in Treasury would conduct a training session with the Knysna councillors of all parties. That is being arranged as we speak, and it will happen later this year. It was decided to rather do it after the election than do it before, because there may be a changing of the guard and so on. I just wanted to point out that as far as the ISDF is concerned, we are very much engaged with Knysna. We've pointed out deficiencies. We're under the impression it's still work in progress. There's no finalization on it. So there's no final provincial position. But certainly from a procurement angle, we reported on some shortcomings in the process. I will also, before the 19th, attempt to find out where the Public Protector is heading with its investigation, if any. We were contacted by that office. Thank you, Chair.
Any clarification from the presentation, Honourable Mohati?
Chairperson, thank you very much. Thank you very much for the presentation. I just want to check, excuse me, Chairperson, what you are saying, there's no final position, Mr. Pretorius, in terms of the outcome of ISDF. I just want to know, when was the letter reported to you? Were there any timelines stipulated for you to deal with this matter, or was it an open-ended exercise that you embarked upon? That's the first question. Two, you are saying you are opting to embark on a workshop simply because there are challenges in terms of procurement the whole of the Western Cape. I just want to talk indeed. What are the challenges specifically that you are relating to? Three, I just want to check. By saying a report was prepared by a task team and Naisla municipality contested the outcome of the task team. And you are further elaborating that there were deficiencies that were outlined in the report. Can you give us an opportunity to know what were these deficiencies that you picked up and what have you done with them? Then the other issue, out of the people that you interviewed, you made mention of Mayor Campbell, that she was also interviewed. What are the rationale behind specifically Mayor Campbell? And finally, what has been your findings specifically on her issues? Lastly, Jane, in the presentation made by Mrs. Campbell, she indicated that most of the alleged, I just want to touch it the same way that she related to us as in my police. Mechandel, in my way of putting it, she indicated since 2011 there's been a number of irregularities in terms of tender processes in the municipality. I just want to check, if you are saying you only started with the task team now, were you not aware of this alleged irregularities around the awarding of tenders in Naisla? Lastly from my side, you are saying councillors are not directly involved in the procurement processes. That's what you identified. Where do you locate the role of councillors in terms of quarterly reports? SM reports that are supposed to be presented before the municipality. The role of councillors in terms of ensuring that they play their own oversight on issues of irregularities. Two, there's the allegations, not even allegations, findings from the Auditor General in terms of national municipality report. If you are saying there's no role that the municipalities play, where do you locate the Auditor General's outcome vis-a-vis the role of councillors to lay an oversight? Thank you, Chair.
It goes back to what I was requested, that there should be a thorough report on this issue. Because if I can be cleared about the terms of reference of the task that was formed by Mr. Pretorius and what makes him to form that and the reason behind of forming that task team. Because he's silent about the term of reference. Because when you're forming an instructor, there should be a term of reference attached so that you evaluate and okay.
You can respond then.
Thank you, Chair. Just on the last issue, terms of reference, yeah, actually we don't have an open mandate to investigate anything in a municipality. We were guided by the written request of the mayor. But we engaged our legal services.
Yes.
I'm saying I get to differ with my honorable Mr. Pretorius to say they don't have any mandate to investigate.
What I'm saying is we were guided by the mayor's written request to us. We then asked our legal services to guide us and to put a terms of reference together for the task team. So that was
a tentative. Can you talk about the committee with the terms of reference for the task team? It will be added to the document you will be forwarding to us on the 19th.
Okay. Okay, Chair. As for the other requests from the Honourable Member, it wasn't an open-ended engagement, but we were requested in 2014, in May, to the best of my recollection, to attend to the ISDF matter. The task team was, as far as I know, established in the third quarter.
Any time attached to
the
request?
Yes. I can't recall that there was a time limit to that request. It was urgent, though, because the successful tenderer was awarded the contract.
Do you remember the year?
It was 2014.
2014.
Yeah, in the middle of the year after the elections.
Yes.
There's a need to respect. It's 2016 now. Two financial years might have passed. So I'm asking a simple question. When you were appointing a task team, part of the responsibility, you can't appoint a task team and not have a stipulation in terms of saying, we think this particular period, we expect the report to be tabled. Two financial years, the provincial treasurers, including corporate
assessment. I hear Honorable Mark. I'm sure, like I've said, they must forward, favor us with the terms of references. Mm. Those terms of references and the response that are given to us, they will inform us on our termination. Let's not, you know, be tempted to engage, for now we may lose a lot of things that will fall in between our fingers. But that's my appeal.
Chairperson, I fully concur. But I'm saying, remember, whoever that appears before the committee, it's not a privilege to ask a committee. It's a constitutional obligation. You have the right to summon any person. And any person that makes presentation before a committee is automatically taken as a person who's making oaths before any other thing. And I'm saying, it's a simple chairperson. If the Honorable Mr. Pretorius is not giving a response to a particular matter, it's fair enough on our own that day to say, I'll be right back, and not just answer some of the responses, or either run away from responding.
Can I respond to that, Chair?
Please.
With great respect, the task team was established in the third quarter of 2014, and the Provincial Treasury concluded its assessments, including the interviews, by the end of that year. It was then, our comments was then included in the local government report that went to NASNA. To the best of my recollection, the first letter from local government went to them in December of 2014, and there were many subsequent engagements between NASNA and the Department of Local Government, subsequent to the first report being submitted to them. Obviously, we must acknowledge that there was some administrative mistake that Ms. Campbell referred to, which also delayed matters for a while. The outcome of this process, I know that at some point the municipality disagreed with the provincial position, but I have not had a final position from the municipality on this. Our report to the municipality is also just a recommendation. It's a different sphere of government. We cannot order them to do things differently. We can point out what we believe is the correct position, what we have done.
Okay. Honorable Mark.
Chairperson, we attempted at times by the opinion that I made. If Mr. Pretorius is saying they can't direct the municipality, I am saying we need also to couple that in terms of the provision of Section 154, Subsection 1 of the Constitution. We say clearly that both province and national have got the responsibility to strengthen the capacity of the municipality and also monitor. When you monitor, you're not a spectator. So I'm saying, much as you raise issues, be careful that you don't raise issues that are outside the auspices of the responsibility. Remember, we are seated here at national. You are from the province. We are dealing with a letter that lies in local government. By virtue that we subscribe to a unitary structure, there's no federal structure in this case, hence we are dealing with matters that are locally based. For the mere fact that we subscribe to the unitary structure, I'm just saying, Chairperson, might as well raise some of the comments. Just strike a balance with the constitutional provisions, otherwise we might run away to a situation where we'd be outrightly saying, the municipality has got autonomy to do all things. And also reflecting 46 section 1 of the constitution, which is saying, it acknowledges that both three spheres of government, they are distinct, but they are interrelated and interdependent. Interdependence means the other one depends on the other to execute their responsibility. So I'm saying such a statement might really mislead the committee, and I'm already chairperson. We must really guard against them.
I think the point is raising, Mr. Pretorius, it goes with the concurrency of the appointment of the municipal manager, which was alleged that you did not even, you know, look into that part. I'm sure those are some of the things that they're saying. The Public Finance Management Act, it requires from you that when you put resources, which amounts other in your budget, you allocated funding to the municipality. You can't put the money and go home. You look at whether the money get, you know, used as intended by the budget you allocated to them. I think that's basically the message is bringing us.
Further than the Jefferson Municipal Permission, you have Section 139 of the Constitution, which says the province has got an obligation, particularly the MEC for local government, to ensure that whenever there are challenges in the municipality, we can always intervene both the province and national. Not only that, if you go to Section 106 of the Municipal Systems Act, it is very clear. Whenever there's allegation of maladministration or any fraud or any other thing that is outside the scope of the law at the level of the municipality, the MEC for HOCTA has got an obligation, constitutional obligation also to that matter. So I'm just saying, let's guard against raising issues that can be easily contested.
Chairperson, just lastly, that's why I wanted to raise the issue of the training workshop that the Provincial Finance Ministry conducted. It was just also to assist and capacitate municipalities to do the procurement thing in most correct fashion. I'm not discounting or disputing the oversight role of councillors. We've offered to assist with their training as well. Thank you, Chair.
Any further input, Honourable Mark? Maybe I must disclose, because he doesn't disclose. Honourable Mwabi is the chairperson of the Select Committee on COCTA. Some of these things that we are dealing with, he does have, you know, direct interest in them. Because when municipalities does not perform well, we went through to those municipalities via himself. He's the one who will lead us to say, let's go to that part. Honourable Mwabi.
Chairperson, thanks for the opportunity. There were also two things that I asked chairperson. One, the deficiencies that were picked up in the report, if you have them now, we appreciate. If you don't have it, they can always be submitted. Then lastly, the interviews made with different stakeholders, in particular the one that was held with Mayor Campbell, what has been your findings? If you have an answer now, we appreciate. But if you feel you submit it at a later stage, then we are comfortable also on that.
Chair, I think we will come back to the committee and include those deficiencies. I'm sure your petitioner is in possession of our full report, because I believe the public projector provided them with a specific report. So we will most certainly not withhold the report from the committee. On the issue of Ms. Campbell, she approached our office as making representations to us at some stage. We referred it to Mr. Bradell's office, but we took an interest in her allegations, and Dr. Mayer, the MEC for Finance, insisted that the provincial task team give her audience, and they had an interview with her. And Campbell, thank you for your complimentary remarks about the Treasury.
Hey, thank you very much. Is there any other outside treasury, any other department? No. Honourable members, I'm a bit worried. We were supposed, among others, to have the department responsible for local government in the province, and it's not here.
No.
Oh, thank you very much.
and to the other part is the municipality itself. Municipality of Nasa is not here, and it is a key role player in you know, assisting us to arrive at determination. We will be left with no option but to find a way of getting them to come to Parliament and talk to issues left by the petitioners and also what the both treasury and local government departments at the provincial level are saying. It is important for our people to understand that we don't just invite or summon people for the sake of love or friendship. We do that as part of an obligatory mandate of Parliament, that where there is a need for us to have information that will help us to arrive at the sound determination of the work of the committee, we need all parties to make submissions to us, so that we don't deprive another side an opportunity to put things in a different way. We would want to make this glorious call to the people of South Africa that anyone get invited by Parliament has to comply. We do have a tool which we don't prefer to use it, where when a person is supposed to provide us with the crucial information, like for now, it won't be correct for Parliament, in particular the Select Committee, to report for NCOP on the information that is incomplete, because it will then make us to mislead NCOP, which we cannot afford. We need everybody, every time you get an invitation, to come and give the side of the story that you are implicated into, to comply, to avoid a tomorrow being seen, calling you to Parliament through the summon served by sheriffs and all this. We don't need that. We are building a cooperative state where all of us were cooperating, we are talking to one another. And as guided by Chapter 3 of the Constitution, which said all organs of state must cooperate with one another in order to build a stable and, a solid democracy in our country. I thought it important for one to make this remark in remarking about those who were supposed to help us, but for some other reason chose not to come. Parliament is the highest, law-making process institution in the country. All of us, we have to help it to arrive at a well-informed decision without taking side of anyone. We want to give everybody a fair chance to present to Parliament. We will decide, one of the members as to when do we then allocate an opportunity for the local government to come and then to speak to us before we arrive at the determination. Thank you very much, and thank you for honoring our invitation. We apologize for any inconvenience that in our administration we kept on confusing you. You thought we were saying 3 in the afternoon, only to say 3 in the morning. Sometimes we work full time, we can call the sitting to 3 o'clock in the morning. We apologize for all those inconveniences, but what is important is for you to help us to know what is exactly taking place in this week. Thank you very much.
Chair, if I may just I know you've ruled that we must submit to you by the 19th. Obviously, we have principles that we must report to, and this budget time in the province, and it's also a very challenging time in view of the fiscal environment. I would beg and plead with this committee that you grant us another week, which would make it the 26th, if at all possible. If not, we'll try and comply, but it's really challenging at this time.
I'm going, Mr. Pretorius, to leave it at on the 19th. And on the 19th, we'll rely on myself and the secretary of the committee to give us an update of
if there are any challenges, we would then look at that and then take a decision in that regard. Thank you very much for the meeting. Thank you.